Thank you, Veronica. Hi, everybody. It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. We hope you enjoy it. You can contribute at any time at 312-981-7200.
That's too long to remember to repeat.
It is, isn't it?
I could lift some of it. Welcome to the show. I'm Bill F. She's Wendy Snyder.
All right, let us talk about the obvious, which is last night's speech at the Republican National Convention. You've told me, and for people who don't know, some are alleging that Melania Trump stole some bits of Michelle Obama's speech from years ago, and you have a theory as to what exactly went on.
It can only be this. Now, first of all, I don't blame Melania. Someone wrote that.
She didn't write that speech. For anyone who thinks she wrote that speech, forget about it. She did not write that speech. And neither did Michelle Obama, by the way. Those guys have speechwriters. Everybody in politics has speechwriters. They can contribute, but they don't write the speeches.
Well, it is weird because I'm looking at college admission letters and how to do it, like formats. I was Googling that last night, and people were saying, don't buy them. You can buy them online. Can you buy a possible first lady speech?
Maybe.
That's not my theory.
It's possible.
But I need names. Okay. Corey Lewandowski was fired and was replaced by, I can't remember his name.
Oh, I don't remember the man's name. I'm sorry.
All right, well, can we listen to the audio first, and then I'll give you my my genius theory that this can only be the truth.
Kevin, here it is. Yeah,
we're raised,
go on.
With so many of the same values, like you work hard for what you want in life, that your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do.
My parents impressed on me the values that you work hard for what you want in life. That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise.
That you treat people with dignity and respect, even if you don't know them, and even if you don't agree with them.
That you treat people with respect. They taught and showed me values and morals in their daily life. That is a lesson that I continue to pass along to our son. And we need to pass those lessons on to the many generations to follow.
And Barack and I set out to build lives guided by these values and to pass them on to the next generation because we want our children and all children in this nation to know that the only limit to the height of your achievements is the reach of your dreams and your willingness to work hard for them.
Because we want our children in this nation to know that the only limit to your achievements is the strength of your dreams and your willingness to work for them.
As a woman who has plagiarized a lot of stuff while writing reports, I know you can just change things around a little bit. But
yeah, right.
The statement, your word is your bond, I've never heard anybody use that before.
Oh, I've heard it before. You've never heard it before? I've heard it before.
Not that it's... You could get 10 people in a room, and I bet maybe one would say that.
Maybe, possibly.
That your word is your bond. That is just...
It seems a little, yeah, there's a bunch of it. Just the structure of it all just seemed exactly the same. You know, when she started out with friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears, that was a red flag.
She should have gone 47 years
right.
ago.
Today I consider myself the luckiest man on the face of this earth. Ich bin ein Berliner. I am a jelly donut. There was a thousand things.
But now...
One small step for man, one large step for mankind. Let's win one for the Gipper. Like, the more she talked, the more you're like, she's stealing parts of this speech.
See, but if she did that, we'd be laughing and praising her.
I know.
This is unbelievable. And just a few minutes ago on CNN.com... Donald Trump's campaign manager denied allegations that Melania Trump plagiarized a Michelle Obama speech on the first night of the Republican National Convention, calling the accusation, quote, just really absurd.
Sure, it's absurd.
Don't you say at that point, yeah, we may have looked at that and, you know, we probably should have, you know, we used that as a template. Don't Can't you just admit it and it's over?
No, they can't admit it. It's impossible to admit it. As obvious as this is, that whoever wrote this speech was heavily influenced by Michelle Obama's speech. And then they asked her, are you afraid people are going to find out you stole the speech? And she said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself.
All right, Paul Manafort is the guy that replaced Corey Lewandowski.
All right, Paul Manafort. Yeah, he's the one defending it like crazy.
Yes, here's his quote to CNN's Chris Cuomo on New Day. This is what Paul Manafort says.
Yeah.
To think that she would do something like that, knowing how scrutinized her speech was going to be last night, is just really absurd.
Sure.
It's not her fault.
It's not her fault. I mean, she's given words on a piece of paper or on a teleprompter to read.
And she's been practicing, I heard, on Ro Khan's show for weeks.
Right. But it's somebody's job in the party to look at that speech and go, ah, that is dangerously similar to a speech that was already given by Michelle Obama. We really need to change it and make it less obvious.
Similar, according again to CNN.com, side-by-side comparisons of the transcripts show the text in Trump's address following nearly to the word the would-be future first lady's own from the first night of the Democratic convention in Denver nearly 8 years ago. Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
Sources familiar with the campaign's handling of Melania Trump's speech identify top Manafort deputy Rick Gates as the person inside the campaign who oversaw the entire speech process for Melania. Now, here's my theory.
Yeah.
You've got the Republican Party trying to pull the carpet out from Donald Trump because they don't want him representing the party. What if this Rick Gates speechwriter was a
sabotage?
Plant? Yes.
Is it sabotage? Well, maybe.
Sabotage.
As William Shatner would tell us.
Gates is maybe denying he oversaw the Melania speech process, which, you know, if Manafort's saying this is the guy who did it and now Gates is saying, I didn't do that.
Right.
I don't know. Two sources said that Donald Trump is furious over the episode this morning.
Oh, no.
How could you do this?
Oh, no.
It's a plant. It's sabotage.
What
else could
it be? There could be something to that. Tim has an idea on line one. I wonder if this is accurate. This
might be similar. Hi, Tim.
Hi, how you doing?
Do you think it's sabotage?
Well, I did. You just explained things exactly as I was thinking.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And it just goes to show you the dysfunction within his campaign. Even his own people, you know, don't want him in there.
You know, if you look at any of these speeches, any of these political speeches, there's going to be some similarities because your goal is to convince everybody watching or listening that your version of America is a better version, that things aren't going quite as well as they could. But with me in office, it's going to be a quick turnaround and you're going to see everybody's going to be much better off. So you're going to see different versions of that. But these two speeches were almost identical.
And why didn't Melania take the immigrant approach? Like, I wanted to come to this beautiful country.
That would have been the best way to play it.
I mean, seriously, that's the way to do it. Tim, I am so with you. I really think it's sabotage.
Hey, can I ask you one more thing?
Is it personal?
Wendy's hoping it's personal.
Please.
I'll text you that one, Wendy.
Okay.
Do you think perhaps Obama can now sue, just like they were trying to sue Zeppelin?
That's pretty funny.
That would be great.
We'll keep you posted on that, Tim.
That would be great.
You are totally on top of cracking the case he hung up on himself. It doesn't really matter what the potential or possible first lady says, but it is an embarrassment, don't you think?
Right. This speech, her speech, there's no way it was going to make or break anybody's decision to vote or not vote for Donald Trump. That wasn't going to happen. But it's kind of a mood setter that first night, especially you bring these people up to kind of set the mood for what the next few days are going to be. And they're really starting out with a couple of black marks. There was the opposition to him in the very beginning, all the people that wanted to go with a state by state recount of the delegates. That was a black mark. And then the plagiarism is a second black mark. So I don't know that this is exactly the way that they were hoping it would start out.
And Melania was mentioned as being the breakout star of the night.
Right.
So doesn't that prove to you no one's listening? They're just looking at her? I guess if
she's
you're
a very attractive woman.
Oh, she is. And she holds herself well. And, you know, she is charismatic just like he is, in a different way.
Right.
But when you're at the convention and this is going on, you're not thinking, wait, didn't Michelle Obama say that? There was some, I don't even know who the reporter was that tweeted it that started this whole thing. He is a genius.
Well, they were talking about it within minutes of the speech. It was all over the place within minutes of the speech that she had plagiarized the speech. So I'm sure somebody will figure out exactly whose job it was. See, the first thing is they have to admit, at some point, somebody has to admit that she didn't write this speech. And that's very hard for anybody in politics to admit the fact that the words they're saying are not their own words. They're somebody else's words. So that's your first stumbling block, is somebody's going to have to say, yeah, there were some similarities, but I hate to break it to you, she didn't write that speech.
It was exactamundo, not just similar.
Yeah.
Quick break, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. What do you think about this? Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Speaking of the Republican convention, we're talking about Melania Trump's speech yesterday. I've heard this one before. Where have I heard this before? Oh, Michelle Obama made the same speech a couple of years ago, didn't she?
I went to CNET.com, just found the first information I could find, and journalist Jarrett Hill was at the convention, and as Melania was speaking, Hill's ears seemed to be piqued by something. He feared he may have heard some of these words before, so he tweeted, were these words secondhand, and that opened up everything. So Jarrett Hill, journalist, interior designer, DIY enthusiast. He's the one who started this whole ball rolling.
Yeah.
Because no one there would have.
Well, I always wonder, like, if you're on one team, if you're on the Republican team, do you watch the other team's convention just to kind of get a feel of what's going on over there? So I'm sure some of the people there must have been like, wait a minute.
Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think I know this speech.
All right. We do. Donald Trump is mad. There's
what's different about that?
Well, he should be mad. Trusted these people to help him.
Right. I know.
Joe, you have a great question.
Yeah. What makes anyone think that Michelle wrote her own speech?
She didn't.
Well, second, why is it the only ones who seem to care about this are the reporters? I mean, it's not like Melania is the one running for office. It's not like we relied upon her to write her own speech for us. It's like, well, hello, hi, I'm Melania, and this is me. So that's the only thing that speech amounted to.
You don't think it's bad form, though, to go up in a forum like that, the Republican National Convention, and use a speech that's lifted?
I think it's hilarious. I think it's excellent mockery, but I also think it's much ado about nothing.
Agreed. We're not voting for her, but it just seems, you know, that you'd want to show some original ideas. And again, I mentioned she should have gone with the whole immigration thing and, you know, how my husband supports immigration. You know, that would have been great. I'll write it for her.
Donald has his own position on the issue. I'm not interested in the wives' positions.
That makes sense. I always think, and other politicians' wives have done this better than we saw or heard Melania Trump, but talk about the personal moments. Don't just keep saying, he is a great man who does great things. Be specific.
Right.
Tell us exactly what your time is like with him. If she's there, she's there because she knows him personally, so share that with the class.
He's nice man, big wallet, dynamo in bed.
Yes. And didn't she call him Oliver several times? I thought I heard her refer to him as Oliver.
Lou, we have 30 seconds here. Hi, Lou.
Hey, it's a left-wing conspiracy. Think about it.
Is it? Why?
Think of the irony of the whole thing. Every time anything ever happened to the Clintons, it was a right-wing conspiracy.
Right.
This, I think it's funnier than hell. So why wouldn't she say, you know, it's a left-wing conspiracy. It worked for Hillary. Why can't it work for her?
Yeah, I guess.
And she could repeat the phrase. That would be easy for her.
True.
Thank you, Lou. We appreciate it. Not only did she lift some words from First Lady Michelle Obama, but she also stole from Rick Astley.
He will never, ever give up. And most importantly, he will never, ever let you down.
Oh, you don't steal from Astley.
She Rickrolled people.
She Rickrolled right there on the platform.
Now though. Now I'm more proud of her.
Nobody puts baby in the corner. Remember when she said that? I'm like, what is she doing? All right, we'll take a quick break. We've got news coming up in a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Veronica, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Effen. It's Wendy Snyder. And I know we're getting
hate texts.
On the text line, a lot of people are upset that we're making fun of Melania Trump. But in all honesty, it's a huge story, you know, the fact that she may or may not have plagiarized a speech from our first lady. So it's big news. Yes, we are making fun of the situation, but I promise you when the Democratic convention comes rolling down the street, we'll make fun of that too. I promise.
Well, it's not that we're making fun of her. It's that we're mocking her accent. It's like, rightly so, that you're, I would like to know why Wendy's very quick to criticize Donald Trump's stance on certain immigrants, and rightly so, but sits on the radio and time again mocks the accent of his immigrant wife. First of all, you did it first.
I did do it first, and I'm not defending making fun, but I am part Slovenian. My mom was Slovenian, and I think it's out of jealousy that Donald
Trump... I have a
Trump,
Slovenian friend.
Do you have a Slovenian friend? Well, then you can also do it. I'm upset that Donald Trump never asked me to marry him. It would have been a pushier life for me. He could have. He chose not to, so his loss.
He would have showed the world that he accepts gay marriage.
Yes, absolutely right.
He picked the wrong person.
He picked the wrong Slovenian is what
but
he did.
But when you're doing an impression of someone and they have an accent, don't you usually
you almost
do
have
it?
To do the accent. We I mean, she's in the news, so you're going to get a little bit of Melania talk for the next day or so, and then I think it'll tail off a little bit, unless she's first lady, in which case you'll hear it every day.
And I'm not mocking her accent. I'm mocking her.
I'm not even mocking her. I'm mocking the process of she did a speech and nobody, I mean, somebody, the way this works is they usually get the speechwriters to write the speech and then
Rick
they try
Gates,
it out.
Allegedly.
Rick Gates was the speechwriter?
Hired by Paul Manafort.
All right, so somebody, once Rick Gates writes this speech, somebody has to hear the speech or read the speech, and that just didn't seem to have happened. Or if they did, they weren't aware, but boy, is it similar. It's not even close. It's like almost the same exact speech.
Will, I can't help myself. I've been derided by, or derailed by a caller. John,
what is it?
You have the best question ever.
I got a question whether Bill Clinton's going to give a first man speech for Hillary. I'm waiting to see what he has to say.
He absolutely will, right? Will. 100% will.
Finally, get the spotlight once again. Oh, sorry, I was mocking his accent.
Don't do it.
Yes, he has to.
What's he got to say about her? She's been a good mother. I can't imagine the things he's got to say.
She's sure stuck by my side.
Right, wouldn't that be something? I had quite a couple of years there, and she stuck by me.
I did have sex with this woman.
Right, that's how he'll bring her up with that. Here's a woman I did have sexual relations
right.
with.
Oh, John, thanks for setting the wheels in motion here.
Thanks.
I can't wait till next week.
You know, I understand the value of having the people closest to the candidate come up and ideally what you want to do.
Show their character.
Yeah. And say, here's a part of this guy or this woman that you have not seen, but I have. I think that time is best served saying, you're not with this guy or this girl every day like I am. Let me tell you some behind the scenes that you may not know to humanize them. There was none of that. Was there any of that yesterday? Scott Baio did a better job of that than Melania Trump did.
Yeah, about that. We'll play Scott Baio's speech later on today because you may owe me
money.
We
had a bet.
You may owe me money.
Oh, no, really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh. We did make a bet on Scott Baio's speech. Rudy Giuliani's speech was interesting. It was very fiery.
He just makes people excited wherever he goes. He really is a great guy.
I keep going back and forth on him.
I really do.
I don't know what it is, but there's times where I go, wow, that guy really gets it. And then there's other times where I go, what happened? Where did he go?
I
And my voice cracks for emphasis.
That's how I felt watching Brian Wilson,
right.
By the way.
Yeah.
But Rudy Giuliani, I just think of all the crap he dealt with during 9/11, and I just,
right.
I really just respect that man.
I don't know that the city would have rebounded anywhere near as quickly if it wasn't for his leadership. So I give him that all the way. But then every once in a while, and there were even during his speech yesterday, because I watched the whole thing, he draw me in. Like back and forth.
Well, he is there on behalf of Donald Trump. So, you know, I don't know if Trump is your man, but sometimes that might sway your decision as well. Because
I don't think I believed, like what you'll get over the next couple of days is people who obviously do believe in Donald Trump. I think his wife honestly believes that that's the best option to be the president.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm not positive Rudy Giuliani does. Are you?
I don't know what you mean.
Like, I think for a lot of those guys, they're playing the party line and they're going, well, I'm a Republican and it's the thing to do. So I'm going to go up and say great things about him. And that's the part that as fiery as Rudy Giuliani was last night, I'm not 100% sure I believe what he's saying.
Not convinced.
No.
And Scott Baio's just glad somebody's mentioning his name now, so he thought this is a great way to get involved.
I think that's part of it.
I know.
I really do.
We'll play his speech later. He did a great job. Not that that's going to sway my decision or
right.
anything.
Wouldn't you be shocked that if there was one person out there who watched Scott Baio yesterday and went, you know what, I was not going to vote for Trump, and then Scott Baio goes up there and just wins me over.
Only one person.
Who?
Scott Baio.
Scott Baio, maybe, right? I don't know. I, you get it though, right? Don't you think that a certain percentage of the people who will be making speeches over the next few days are doing this because it's the party thing to do?
Want to keep the party together.
And it's going to happen on the Democratic side
Absolutely.
Too. That's not a one-sided thing. Right. Is to show some sort of unity in a situation where unity doesn't seem to exist, really.
Wouldn't this be so entirely different if he just ran as an independent?
If Donald Trump did.
Yeah. I almost feel he would have done better.
Boy, that's come up as an option so many times, and then you always get somebody with a lot more knowledge than I have who always says, "Yeah, but the odds of winning as an independent are almost impossible."
Prior to Donald Trump.
Yeah. Well, yeah. This is the election that's already broken all the rules. So break another rule.
I wonder
right.
if he regrets not going in as an independent.
As an independent?
Because then he doesn't have to worry about what the Republican Party does
right.
and how they're trying to take him down by planting a sabotage artist to write Melania's speech, to steal Melania's speech from Michelle Obama.
I know.
Doesn't it, every day never ceases to amaze
Oh, yeah. There's new folds
it's
all the time.
Exciting times.
It is exciting. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll talk to the good people over at CNET next. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It is a Tech Tuesday, one of your favorite days.
One of my top seven.
You're a tech wizard.
Yes.
We just quoted CNET.com earlier. We were trying to find out who the journalist was that tweeted Melania Trump's speech that was very similar to Michelle Obama, and CNET.com says that it blew up the internet when journalist Jarrett Hill tweeted about that. We have Ashley Esqueda on right now, who is from CNET, and you host the Tomorrow Daily Show. How are you?
I do. How are you guys? I'm good.
How are you guys? I'm good, too. I'm just
going
to start
you're
repeating
stealing.
Everything.
You can't steal. You can't lift from other people.
Yeah. There are words in the English language, you know. mm-hmm.
Different ones.
Oh, wow. What a Twitter gift that was last night.
How about it? And something else that came up in the news last week, before we talked to you, we were talking about Netflix, and a lot of people were scared for sharing a password that they were going to go to jail. That turned out not to be true, but Netflix has increased their prices a little bit, and I noticed that in our bill.
Yeah, so this is actually pretty interesting and not great for Netflix in some ways, but I guess good for them in other ways. So they announced a price hike, and they said we're going to raise the price for the most popular plan that everyone uses to $10 a month, to $9.99. And then older members were grandfathered in at their previous rate for a year, but that expired recently. So when that expired, Netflix reported, well, we only added 160,000 U.S. subscribers. And that was way less than what they had anticipated. And so their stock tumbled pretty good this week. But they had said, you know, hey, well, if you kind of balance out how many people, even though it's less people, they're paying more money. And on top of that, like, we really felt like the press sort of scared people into canceling their Netflix subscriptions. And so it's been pretty interesting for them, because of the Google sort of the algorithm has sort of pointed people towards, you know, Google price or Netflix price increases. And so they said, we got caught off guard by a lot of people who didn't actually face a price increase, but canceled anyway.
But, so you know, wait, you mentioned 160,000 new customers. You know, I don't know what their typical run is for new customers, but you still have plenty of people who pay monthly. So I don't understand why they'd be losing money. They're still getting 160,000 new monthly subscribers.
Well, I think they had hoped to add 500,000 streaming members in the U.S. And so just 160,000 is a pretty big drop beyond their forecast. And so obviously the investors don't care for that. And then also, as they were saying, they sort of got caught off guard by announcing this price increase. And then a lot of customers who actually didn't face a price increase saying, well, I'm canceling because I read online that, you know, my price is going to go up and I don't want that. So I'm canceling, even though it wasn't. So they said, hey, like, maybe the media sort of blew this up out of proportion and some customers got a little bit scared and maybe got some misinformation and canceled. So, pretty interesting stuff for Netflix, but obviously raising their prices is just one of those things that, you know, people don't care for it. We see it all the time with Amazon Prime when they raise their prices, and other services. And you know, people just, they want to save money. And so that's the whole point of cord cutting, is you want to save money. So over time, you know, these packages are going to get more expensive. I hope we don't end up where we used to be with cable packages price wise, but, you know, it creeps up there because you've got to add all these separate services.
If you sit down and write all the monthly charges you're doing, I think we will all be astounded.
Oh, sure.
You know, sure. It's like, yeah. Adobe Audition I subscribe to for editing, and that used to be a one-time fee. It was expensive. It was like $400 or $500. Mm-hmm. But now it's like a monthly fee. Everything has gone to this monthly fee. And right. When you sit down and figure out how many monthly fees you're paying.
There's a bunch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Ashley, as you know, I'm not as tech savvy as anyone else on the planet. However, I saw something yesterday that I have to have. I don't know where I get it. I don't know if it's already available, but it's the Google Tilt Brush. Please explain what this is, because I thought I was dreaming when I saw this thing.
Oh, well, this, you know, it does, in fact, make you feel as if you are walking in your own imagination. This is really cool. So Tilt Brush is a software application that is being bundled in with the HTC Vive, which is a virtual reality headset that came out a little earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it enables you, when you put the headset on and you use the controllers become your paintbrush for all intent and purposes, and you can draw in 3D. So imagine being able to.
You want to do this?
I want to do this now. I can't believe how cool it is.
It's really amazing, and it really is a testament to. So every time I've seen somebody do a demo of the HTC Vive, Tilt Brush is always close to or at the top of their list.
Sure.
They love it. It blows people's minds, and it really gets them to understand what virtual reality is in terms of being a creator or being in a virtual space, a 3D space. Because you draw, let's say you write your name out in front. Well, that looks two-dimensional, but then you can actually walk behind it and look at the backside of it. So there's this great video that Google has online of artists using Tilt Brush, and they're able to, one of the artists created a whole bunch of clothing out of paint, out of virtual paint.
Yep.
And another artist created, and you can also paint with things that you can't paint with in real life, like fire and twinkling stars and a grid of rainbows.
There's,
you know,
an active volcano I'm looking at right
now.
That's
my favorite part, is the guy with the volcano. That's amazing.
Yeah, you made this like whole 3D volcano that you can walk all the way around, and it's, honestly, the one thing about virtual reality, I always tell people who sound skeptical about it, if you're out there and you're listening and you go, I don't know, virtual reality, it sounds kind of lame. I thought the same thing, too. I said, you know, I remember those old county fairs where we used to be able to, you know, pay $20 for 5 minutes of virtual reality, and it was horrible.
Sure.
It was the worst.
Yeah.
This is so far beyond that, and it will make you a believer if you get to try it out. And I believe some Best Buys have Oculus Rift demo stations where you can try virtual reality. Any age, I highly recommend that you try it out. They've really made some gains on things like motion sickness, so that you don't have to really worry as much if you maybe get motion sickness a little easier than
anybody else. Yeah, I get that a lot.
Yeah.
They've made some gains on that. They've certainly worked very hard to minimize that. And honestly, a lot of these demos are very much, they're stationary or they require very little movement. So, and they want people to have a good first experience. So I highly recommend if you ever get the chance to try any virtual reality headset, the higher end ones, which would be Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive. I can't recommend it enough, because when you do that, you get it. You really get what virtual reality is. I just tried, you would really love this, I think, Wendy. I just climbed Mount Everest in VR.
Wow.
All right, that's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool?
It was so neat, and it was they used over 300,000 high-resolution images to recreate different points of interest on Everest, and I'll never climb it in real life. I mean, I can barely climb a flight of stairs.
But what would have happened if you fell off the virtual reality mountain? Would you feel like you were dropping?
So here's the thing. I'm afraid of heights.
Yeah.
And there were some moments, certainly, where I had to pass over a crevasse, and I was not happy about that. I mean, it really does give you a sense of height. And if you have vertigo, I have reverse vertigo. So sometimes I would say, if looking down, don't look down.
yeah, I couldn't do that.
I think one of my favorite videos on the internet, right when virtual reality started kind of, being available to people like developers, was there was a guy who was watching, a roller coaster demo.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was just standing there, and he was wearing the headset, and you could see on the TV the roller coaster was creeping up to the top of the hill. And then as soon as it started going downwards, someone from behind pushed him forwards a little bit, and he really freaked out.
Oh, like, I bet.
It really freaked him out.
There has to be some rules and etiquette when you're doing virtual reality.
Yeah, the nice thing about the HTC Vive actually has a camera, a front-facing camera in the headset. So when someone approaches you, you can actually see a little outline of a person in your headset. So you know there's
somebody. Like how Donald Trump appeared last night.
Similar.
To introduce exactly Melania.
Like, right, exactly. Same kind of principle.
Very similar.
Yep.
You know, that Google tilt brush, as I was watching the video, Bill, you could be like Harold in the Purple Crayon, but just way better.
Oh, yeah. That's so exactly right.
That's pretty
it's
cool.
It's very similar to that. If you've ever read that story to your kids, the Purple Crayon is, I mean, you basically can take control of a magical device that will allow you to create whatever it is that you want in a 3D space. It's really incredible. The virtual reality, I was a skeptic, and in the last 6 months, I have been made a believer, and it's been really fun to see all of the different things people are creating. And it's like the Wild West again with gaming and experiences. People, even developers, are like, we're not really sure what people want, so we're going to make all these cool little experiences and demos and small things and really see what strikes people. So it's been really fun to watch.
Well, Ashley, if you're wondering what to get Wendy or me for Christmas, that would probably be your best bet. Get us one of those.
I will. All right. I will tell Santa that's what you
Please
want.
Do. Please
Just
do.
Just draw Santa and have it give him to
that's
us.
That's easier.
He always calls us. He calls us every year for the gift guide. Yeah. And so we always let him know what's good. And so I'll let him know. Bill and Wendy, virtual reality.
Oh, you're the 100%. Best. You are
awesome.
The best.
No problem.
That's Ashley Escada over at CNET. Go to CNET.com and you'll be amazed. Thanks so much, Ashley. Have a great week.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
All right, take Thanks. Care. Quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I don't even know.
Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
What is on second?
You don't want who on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know.
Third base!
Listen to this.
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not staying out of the infield.
That, of course, is Abbott and Costello, one of the most legendary comedy teams of all time. Chris Costello is the daughter of Lou Costello, and a book that she's written, Lose on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child, has now been turned into an e-book. Chris, thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm doing really good. It was kind of fun to hear some of the new stuff because I used to live in Chicago.
Oh, really? Yeah.
You know, yeah. Schiller Park.
Schiller Park. We were just talking about Abbott and Costello yesterday that, you know, we did a promo saying that we were going to be talking to you. And it seems like young or old, everybody knows that bit. And it's still hilariously funny every time you hear it. It doesn't grow old.
No, it doesn't. And I always say, you know, long after we're gone, that routine is going to keep them going. I think it just, you know, I did an interview not too long ago, and I was saying that, you know, you don't even have to be an Abbott and Costello fan to really appreciate it, because if you're a sports fan, you know, baseball fan, you're going to really embrace it. But it certainly is the signature skit. I mean, I've talked to young kids, you know, young, you know, teenage kids, who say their parents, you know, introduce them to it, and it's one of their favorite routines. So I think it transcends all ages.
Aren't they in the Baseball Hall of Fame for that? They're in Cooperstown for that, aren't they?
Yeah, they're not actually inducted.
Oh, they're not?
That's a misconception, though.
Oh.
What it was is that they donated the gold record of who's on first to the Baseball Hall of Fame back in 1957. And it hangs there in perpetuity. You know, we have a lot of people on our Facebook that are making the treks up there to see it. And they also show who's on first in one of the areas of the museum.
Oh, okay. All right. So, Chris, yeah. Clear this up for us, because as anyone is a fan of your dad's work and his partner Bud Abbott's work has heard over the years, it was a strenuous relationship, wasn't it? It was something of a love-hate mm-hmm. relationship.
No, you know, I always say the press has such a capability, excuse me, for kind of taking something that is very innocent, you know, and blowing it way out of proportion. So people think of Abbott and Costello, great comedy team. Oh, my God, they must have hated each other, right? And I say, you know, these two guys were together for 25 years. Bud Abbott said they saw more of each other than their own wives.
Yeah.
What relationship is not going to have an occasional argument or disagreement? I mean, if they had survived 25 years without having an argument, I'd kind of be scratching my head. Of course they did. They had their arguments. They had their disagreements. But as fast as they occurred, they also ended. They were like siblings, seriously.
And yeah. Siblings fight all the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but people think because they had an argument, they couldn't like each other. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. Both men were fiercely, and I mean fiercely protective of the other. So even in the midst of an argument, if somebody said anything derogatory about my dad or to Bud or about Bud, both guys, you know, really went to the defense of the other. So they were like siblings. The families are still very close to this day. So I always like to say, hey, look, what relationship, what marriage, what friendship, what business relationship is not going to have a disagreement? You know, and so I always kind of laugh it off. But I think to a lot of the fans, they need to have that reassurance. Well, they did like each other. Well, of course they did. They wouldn't have lasted 25 years.
Yeah, true.
Transcending everything from burlesque to radio to film to TV if they didn't like each other. But Dad and Bud were two different personalities off camera. Dad was very gregarious. Bud was a little bit more to himself. You know, he just a very quiet spoken man. He wasn't his character that you see him as. You know, he very gentle soul, very, very gentle spirit. You know, so I just say you have these different personalities in the mix as well. But as far as liking each other, they loved each other. They couldn't have been closer than if they were related by blood.
Oh, good.
And let's go back to their beginnings. Is it true they met while your father was hitchhiking?
No. My father first tried to do a stint in Hollywood back in the mid-20s. He wanted to be an actor. Charlie Chaplin was his idol. But he looked at Chaplin more as an actor than as a comic. So he came out to Hollywood, and he was trying to make a break into films. He worked on a construction crew at MGM, tried stunt work, which is kind of funny in itself. because they put him on a horse, and he had never seen a horse because he was from Paterson, New Jersey.
No, and just a horse head in your bed, maybe, but not, you know.
Really. He said, you know, that he slept in a lot of parked cars, eating a lot of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. He did a couple of extra bits, Laurel and Hardy's film, Battle of the Century. He's sitting ringside. And also did Trail of 98, which was a silent film epic. And just don't even blink. You know, he comes through the saloon doors and that's it. But it was an actress, Dolores Costello, that suggested he go back to New York, perfect his craft, let Hollywood ask for him. And that's what he did. But he got as far as St. Joe, Missouri, and ran out of money. And he noticed that across the street from this coffee shop he was in, they were advertising for a Dutch comic. So he went over there. And he said, I'll do everything except I won't wear a putty nose. I won't talk in a Dutch accent. I'll do everything else. And so he was there for about a year. And then he got enough money together and he got himself back to New York. And then he started in burlesque as a dancing juvenile.
Juvenile.
I like the name.
That's a great band name. Somebody
that's a great
name.
Basically, the dancing juvenile was the warm up act for the Top Banana.
Yeah.
And so he got the crowd going. And he was there in burlesque, you know, doing that for a while. And then he teamed up with a straight man. And his name escapes me right now. At any rate, they were performing on the circuit. And the dad straight man got sick one night. And Bud happened to be on the same bill, knew all the routines because he was a veteran in burlesque longer than dad. And he offered to fill in, and history was made.
We're talking with Chris Costello. Chris, of course, the daughter of the legendary Lou Costello. Her book, Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child, is now an e-book that's on Crossroads Press. Chris, you mentioned that your dad did some work with Laurel and Hardy, which is interesting because sometimes, I know you're already aware of this, your dad's work and Bud Abbott's work was compared to Laurel and Hardy's. Was he comfortable with that comparison?
No, there was no comparison. I always say, you know, this is apples and oranges. Yeah, how do you compare any of the great iconic teams? You can't.
Right.
You know, everyone had a different style. They appealed to a different type of an audience. I always say if you look back into the history of comedy teams starting off in World War One, it was Wheeler and Woolsey that really lifted the morale of the American public. And then you get into the Depression years and you've got Laurel and Hardy, you've got W.C. Fields, that were sort of lifting the morale. Then World War II, Abbott and Costello, you know, comes in. But, you know, I always say that to compare all these teams to each other, you can't.
Sure.
And I always say, look, you don't have to like every team, you know. I mean, it's what somebody gravitates towards, the type of comedy. But you can appreciate what they gave, you know, to the world and certainly the American public.
No question. Yep. You know, all right, Chris, hold that thought. We got to take a quick break. Chris Costello is here, the daughter of Lou Costello of Abbott and Costello fame. Her book is called Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Our guest is Chris Costello. Chris is the daughter of Lou Costello of Abbott and Costello fame. She has a book, Lou's on First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child. You can get it in regular book form or now on e-books, wherever books are sold. Chris, I got to pay a compliment to your dad. He made a movie, of course, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And a couple of years ago, I was having a conversation. We in Chicago have a horror movie host here named Svengoolie. And I said to Svengoolie,
you know
Svengoolie.
Well,
I was hoping.
Schiller Park.
Yeah, so you know Svengoolie.
I love Rich.
Rich Coase.
Yeah.
So I said to him, one of my favorite horror movies, this will sound crazy, but I love Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And he nodded and he said, that's a great horror movie. And we agreed it's because we already knew Bud and Lou, and we didn't want to see Frankenstein or Dracula or the Wolfman do harm to people that we knew and loved.
That is so funny. And would you believe that is the one film my dad hated?
Really? Why?
Well, he felt that Universal had lost complete trust in Abbott and Costello. carrying a film. And so therefore they were going to overload this film with all these monsters. And so Dad was really not too happy about it. And I think he went up to the big guys up in the tower at Universal and threw the script on the desk and said, my 3-year-old kid could write a better, you know, story than this. But I think if he were to come back and see what a cult film this film has turned out to be and how the film actually has generated another legion of fans for him and Bud, they would be astounded, absolutely astounded. But, yeah, that was not his favorite.
Now, did your father and Bud Abbott get enough money that they deserved? I know things are different now, and I feel like maybe they didn't get the funds they should have.
Well, I think during that era, you know, it was pretty good money. You know, of course, today it's a whole other story, as you're saying. I mean, you know, actors are getting, you know, huge amounts of money for their films and points and this and that. What Dad and Bud did do is they entered into what was called the 11-picture deal with Universal, that they would receive profit participation off of 11 of their pictures. The only one that was never included was Abbott and Costello Meets Frankenstein. But I think for their era, they made very good money. I think towards the 50s, when they were getting older, energy was not as high. I think the scripts were failing as far as content. And I think some writers were on board that really didn't have the feel for Abbott and Costello as some of the earlier writers on their films. You know, it was tapering off. But again, it was a different era, different era. But for their time period, I think they did very well. And, they, you know, stars back then, they didn't get profit participation. Dad and Bud, and through their manager, Eddie Sherman, negotiated this, you know, with Universal. So, you know, I think they did very, very good.
Well, that's good to know.
That is good to know. Chris, one of the most difficult episodes in your dad's life was the loss of your brother, just a baby, not even 1 year old, drowning in the family pool. An awful, awful story. This changed him a bit, right? I would imagine it would have to change him a bit.
I think it would change anybody to lose a child. You know, no parent should ever, ever have to outlive their child. And I think because of the tragic incident of Lou Jr. Butch, you know, passing away just 3 days shy of his first birthday, it was also my dad's first day back on his radio show after being laid up with rheumatic fever for a year. And so, you know, he had all this time with Lou. And whereas with my two older sisters, he was still working burlesque, so he missed some of those cherished, you know, moments, the first step, the crawling, whatnot. But he had asked my mother to keep the baby up that night to see if he would be able to recognize his voice on the radio.
Yeah.
When Lou Jr. passed away, of course, every major star in Hollywood was calling in saying they would take over for him on the show that night. And he said, no, he said, I'm going back. And everybody kind of just looked at him and go, how? And he said, because I asked Dan to keep the baby up tonight to see if he could recognize my voice. And wherever God has taken my son, I want him to know he can still hear me.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. But he turned something very negative into a very positive healing process, because in 1947, and this is still going today in East Los Angeles, he opened up the Lou Costello Jr. Youth Foundation for the underprivileged kids of East L.A., a place to get them off the streets into a supervised area. He built an Olympic-sized swimming pool so that every child would learn how to swim. No one was turned away. There was no payment for it. Everything was free. And this was his way to heal, and it was giving back. And that's what I think when people say, how do you want your father remembered? Oh, of course, you know, Who's on First and all these great films he did. But for me, and I think a lot of the family, it's remembering the humanitarian side of him. There's an old expression that someone who likes to keep giving, you know, to others has, what is it, long arms, short pockets. And that's what he was all about. He was out there to help people. He wanted people to have a better life. If there was a child in need, don't even ask twice. You know, he was right there. And that's sort of how I really would love people to remember him by, because he really was a humanitarian.
Oh, yeah.
We have a caller who wants to say something to you, Chris. Chris Costello on the line with us. Harold, you had a comment for Chris?
Yeah, hello, guys, and a pleasure to speak with you. My mom got me into Abbott Costello when I was young. She, you know, there were certain things that she loved, and she was crazy about any Abbott Costello movie. But Paul Harvey used to do little segments on the radio, and he talked about, Lou Costello played a boxer a few times in some of his movies, and it was always, you know, hilarious and everything. But he actually was a very good boxer, from what I understand, as an amateur boxer.
Is that true, Chris?
He wasn't that good. He wanted to be Malou King before he went to Hollywood the first time. And he was living at home, and he was always appearing at the breakfast table with these shiners. And he kept saying to his mom, you know, you really got to lower these doorknobs or raise them or whatever. And so they did not know what he was doing, but it was his uncle who said to my dad's father, my grandfather, he said, I hear there's a new kid that is going to be fighting this weekend. Do you want to go with me? He said, sure, let's go. They sat ringside, and all of a sudden my dad comes into the ring as Liu Kang, and my grandfather almost passed out. And the next morning, Dad came to the breakfast table with another shiner, and my grandfather was reading the newspaper, and he just kind of lowered the paper, looked at him over his glasses, and said, how are you doing this morning, Liu Kang? And that ended the boxing career.
Sure. So,
you know, he was not really a great boxer, but he, you know, all the footwork and stuff, you know, I mean, a lot of the footwork you see in films is his training ground from training as a boxer. Also, he was a great basketball player in the South, shooting champion of 1924-25. In New Jersey.
Wow.
So, you know, he loved sports. He was very agile, very, very, very agile. He knew how to move, use his body, and he carried that over into burlesque.
There you go, Harold.
Pratfall.
Okay, great.
You know.
Thank you for calling.
Chris, to be honest with you, I'm glad he wasn't a great boxer because he turned out finding the exact right vocation. What a hysterical man your father was. Chris Costello's book, again, is called Lose On First, The Tragic Life of Hollywood's Greatest Clown, warmly recounted by his youngest child. You can get it on book. You can get it on ebook. Go to crossroadspress.com. They've got the information. It's on Amazon. It's on eBay. It's everywhere. Great to meet you, Chris. Thanks so much for spending time with us.
Wonderful talking with both of you. And say hello to Chicago for me. I miss that city.
Done deal.
When you come back to visit, come in and see us. We'll go to Schiller Park for lunch.
Oh, I love it.
All right. You got a date.
Thanks,
Chris. Thank you, Chris. Thanks so much. All right. We'll take a quick break, and then we've got some news for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Tim, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Hopefully showing our versatility over the next couple of minutes. We just talked to Chris Costello, the daughter of Lou Costello, of Eben Costello fame. And then we are anxiously awaiting to find out if we're chatting with Gary Johnson and William Weld. These are your candidates for the Libertarian Party for presidency.
And, you know, not since H. Ross Perot.
The great H. Ross Perot.
I would just ask you off the air who he ran against, because I can't remember if I voted for Ross Perot. I know I was going to.
He was up against Bill Clinton and Bob Dole.
I don't think I pulled the trigger on.
No?
Well, let me show you something. I don't think I pulled the trigger on Ross Perot.
He was very energetic, wasn't he?
Yes, but, you know, it was the kind of the same thing where you wanted someone who wasn't meddling in politics.
Right. He was a businessman, which is similar to what we're experiencing right now. And really, if you stop and think about it, you say to yourself, if it's a non-politician, who would be better equipped to run the country than somebody who has been successful at business? It does make sense. There are parallels there. I'm just not positive that H. Ross Perot was that businessman or that Donald Trump is that businessman. But you would think there's a lot of the same business acumen that goes in.
A lot of the similarities, too, in the way they would just say something off the cuff and,
right,
you know, not right, really. They were just talking.
Right. Don't you think, and I've said this before, that if you're running a company, especially a successful company, whatever you says gets a lot of nods of approval from everybody around you because you're the head of the company. But then once you try to translate that to being the president, it doesn't work exactly that way. There's going to be opposition. When it's your company, when your name is on the company and on the building, everyone's going to go, yeah, boss, what you just said, dead on right. But maybe that doesn't play out exactly when you're the president.
Yeah, I don't know. And with this unpopularity contest we have going on with Hillary Clinton.
That's the perfect description of what's going on right now is an unpopularity contest.
That is. And Donald Trump, I don't know. I think that the Libertarian Party candidate might have something to work on. Gary Johnson is the Libertarian Party candidate and may get to actually participate in the debate. He needs 15%. Of, here's what they're saying. He needs at least 15% in 5 national public opinion polls before the first presidential debate. And if that happens, he's going to be eligible to appear on the stage with the Democratic and Republican nominees. He's at 12% now.
I wonder who he takes. Let's say he gets involved in the debates, but let's also say he doesn't win. Let's say he's not our next president. I wonder whose votes he takes away from, if it's on the Republican side or the Democratic side or both. It could very well be both.
That's a really great question.
I wish Steve Cochran were here to answer some of these questions.
No, he's just coming with a large supply of pens to put in the drawer that everybody keeps.
We have 97 highlighters in this drawer.
We do have a lot of highlighters.
No one uses the highlighters. That's why there are highlighters.
The next 100 callers win a highlighter.
Everybody call now, win a highlighter. Thank you, Steve.
Well, yeah, the Republican National Convention.
Does Steve always walk around with a security blanket? I've never seen that before.
Somebody must have made that for your granddaughter.
I get insecure.
Oh, sometimes he gets
insecure. Who doesn't?
That happens. Thanks, Steve.
I don't know if we're talking to Gary Johnson. Here's the deal. Steve talked to him earlier this morning. He was up at CNN.
Yeah.
And he may be coming down, but we might be out of show before that happens.
Oh, all right.
So will he be on the Wintrust Business Lunch?
I don't know how that works. I'm not responsible.
He's former governor of New Mexico.
A businessman, by the way. You know that, right?
No.
I know he started out in business. So if and when we do talk to him, I'll ask him a similar version of that same question is, you know, what's the differences and what's the similarities in running a country as opposed to a company?
And, you know, who's his celebrity endorser? You know, right. Trump's got Scott Baio.
Right. Right. Who do you go after?
Who's Hillary going to have? Some bigwigs, I would imagine, speaking at the Democratic convention, which I believe is next week.
Somebody sent us a list. Somebody texted us some names yesterday, and then I tried to verify that list. I remember Lady Gaga's name is on there, but I can't find
Somebody's
it anywhere.
Somebody's messing with you.
Is that what it is? Because I looked for it
texters.
I looked everywhere to try to find out if that list was legit or not.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we may or may not talk to Gary Johnson, but this would probably be in his favor to speak to the masses, because the unpopularity contest that's going on, people are looking for an alternative.
True.
I'm not, endorsing Gary Johnson at all, but I'd certainly like to talk to him and hear from him.
All right. We'll see if we can get that done next. If not, something just as entertaining. I promise you, it's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
They sell overalls in Oshkosh?
I would imagine you could probably get them fresh there.
I had the best pair of the engineer striped overalls.
Oh, those are nice.
I love those. I don't know if they're
Me
still
too.
In the
and
closet.
Do you remember when you used to wear one suspender buckled and the other one down?
That's the cool
that
way.
That was
street.
That's the cool way.
That was cool. God, I miss my overalls. I'm going to go buy some more.
You should get them.
They're very popular again.
Do they still make underalls? Do you remember those?
Underoos, you mean?
No, they made underalls. They were women's underwear. Don't ask me why I know.
They're called Spanx now, Bill.
Is it the same thing? Is
I
it the exact
so.
Same thing?
Yeah, I guess I do remember underalls.
Underalls.
Like a girdle
yeah.
kind of thing to keep you in?
I don't know the science of it. I just know that...
What did they look like? Granny panties?
Kind of, yeah.
Except tight granny panties?
There was a display at the JCPenney's where we used to shop for them.
You circled them in the catalog, didn't you?
Good God.
And the display...
Your mom thought you were in the toy department.
Right. It was strategic, the way the toy department was right across from the women's underwear section. So there was a display that was like motorized that was like a woman's hindquarters going up and down.
What?
Yeah, isn't that weird? And
It was like a half a body, right?
Yeah, it was. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
It really was. That was their display.
Her cheeks were going up and down?
Yeah, so that you could see how effective they were on you, you know?
And did you then go, Mom, you should get some of these?
No, that would have been weird. I went up to Perfect Strangers and told them they should get them. Ma'am, I don't know you, but I bet these would look great on you.
Wow, which JCPenney was that? Because they didn't have that at
North
Riverside Park.
That was in Lincoln Mall. Very, it was very progressive there in Matson. Very progressive, Wendy. I don't know why I remember them. But
oh, I do.
I don't know. They weren't.
Those are butt cheeks.
They weren't.
It's moving.
They weren't provide. Yeah, it was scary. I was warning people. Stay away from that thing. It's moving. It's alive.
I guess I do remember underalls.
Underalls.
And legs pantyhose that came in the
eggs. Big display of giant eggs. Do they don't make those anymore,
no.
Right? That's long gone.
They were the itchiest pantyhose on the
were
planet.
Were they really?
Oh, my
yeah.
gosh, yes.
Can I tell you that is the best thing on earth is no one really wears pantyhose anymore except the waitresses at Hooters. Seriously.
Is that true?
And
yes.
ice skaters.
And yeah,
ice
I guess skaters. Ice skaters do too.
It's like all of a sudden it was okay not to wear pantyhose and to be bare-legged, even
right.
at like a dressy event.
Right. Right, right,
but
right.
Boy, all those dances in high school where you had to wear pantyhose.
The worst.
Yeah.
Although I'm good with black tights in the winter.
Tights are...
That's still happening.
Tights
right?
are
they're
more...
Comfy.
They're stretchier. I mean, putting on pantyhose when you're a young kid and you don't really know how to do it is like wrestling an alligator. If somebody would see you trying to put those on
oh,
the
I
bed...
Bet.
And then you get them on and you tear them.
Right away, there's a run. Either your watch, your bracelet,
yeah,
or your
sure.
nail goes through. Tights are the way to go, or bare-legged.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's all I got to say.
And is it still, what would you use to repair that?
Nail polish.
It was nail polish. Why would that work?
Because it would just prevent the run from continuing. It wouldn't seal it up. Or, actually, it did seal it,
the
fibers,
it?
But it, like you'd still see it.
Right, you still have a hole.
Oh.
But typically it was up, you know, covered by your skirt where the hole
yeah.
was. And then if you got nail polish on run right away, it wouldn't run down to the rest of your leg.
Think about how weird the concept is. And I know now society has caught up with this idea, but just the concept of pantyhose and the fact that it's like fake legs that you're pulling down and putting over the shower wire. It's just weird, isn't it? The whole thing's
weird.
What are
you talking about?
That's how people wouldn't people dry them out or between uses? Just women would just put
You'd
them over there.
Use your woolite and,
yeah.
you know, hang them
But isn't it weird to just, like, take off, like, part? It's just a weird concept.
Snakes do
me.
It. They shed
yeah,
their
but,
skin.
But it's more reptilian than it is human, isn't it?
All I know is, like, when you take the legs out of the egg and you're looking at the pantyhose, you're like, how am I getting my body in something that looks like, you know, for a Barbie doll?
Right.
They were so small.
Yeah, but somehow it worked.
Pains. You had to, the best way was to roll them and put your foot in and then very gently pull them up. Those things ran all the time.
I'm sure of it.
Wasn't it a problem, Kim?
Oh, it was horrible.
It really was. Thank God we have burned our bras and our pantyhose.
All in the same day. What a day that was.
Hey, guys, I just want to bring you up to date on
sure.
something we're seeing on Twitter. It appears shots have been fired at a Cleveland police transport car near the site of the Republican convention. They say there are no injuries. That's really all I have at this point, so I will keep you up to date on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, keep your eye on that. Wow, that's scary.
Got to keep make America safe, and there are a lot of people gathered in one place.
Yeah.
It's scary to me.
Really quickly, since we're on the topic of the eggs,
mm-hmm.
and it was called I'm trying
legs,
to remember
L apostrophe E-G-G-S.
Right? Okay. I never understood this because I had no use for them, but I would see the display anytime we were shopping at Jewel or Eagle.
Boy, your mom took you to some great.
We went
places.
To nice places. how could they possibly fill up an entire? Because it was a huge display. Is it just sizes or was it colors? Why were there so many different types of it?
It was sizes, but they also
it was
had,
a combo. I think it was both.
They had
sizes
nude,
and color,
they had
yeah.
suntan.
Oh, they did.
You always got the nude because you thought that would be
That's
the most realistic.
Did you
sure.
save the eggs? We actually saved
What'd
them.
What'd you do with them?
We played with them.
Did
yeah,
you
we
really?
Did too, yeah.
Wow. And what sort of a game would you use?
I don't
what?
Remember, but I also remember my mom would save them and put like our ponytail holders and stuff in them.
Oh, that I could see. That makes
well,
sense.
They were, you know, you get the plastic Easter eggs. It was just like that, but they were pretty big.
Yeah.
But help me remember this. Sometimes they were the color of eggs. They were like eggshell, obviously.
They were white mostly.
But then sometimes there'd be like a metallic silver
Control
or gold
top.
One. Is that what that was?
Mm-hmm.
I thought those were for rich people. Only rich people could afford the really nice silver and gold ones.
You thought it was the Willy Wonka contest. There's the
right.
golden egg. I found
right.
it.
I get to tour the factory now. They should have done that as a promotion for legs.
Those have gone by the wayside.
Right. Do robbers even still use them when they're getting when they're doing bank robberies? I bet they don't.
No, and that you had to get a single panty hose for that. Because otherwise you'd have like a loose...
Oh, there'd be an extra one.
There'd be an extra leg hanging right there, like an ear.
Right. Unless you had like a partner who was very close to you, you could each put one side on. Oh no, the conjoined twin bandits have robbed our bank.
The getaway is difficult unless they're completely synchronized.
Right.
I said left.
Right. Go left now.
I said right.
Turn. Yeah, it would have been very impossible.
No, bank robbers had, didn't they have to use the thigh highs? That there
oh,
was
yeah,
no
that would make more
crotchal
sense.
Region. It right was just a single leg.
Right. Are you as shocked as I am that the Libertarian candidate for presidency hasn't
blown
shown
us
up?
Off.
Yeah, because if I was listening to this on the way in, I don't want to do that show.
Yeah, I don't know. But it is interesting. And we were going to talk to Gary Johnson and William Weld.
Yes.
This is the Libertarian Party candidate, Gary Johnson, running for president. He's at 12% 5 national public opinion polls. If he gets to 15%, he's going to be eligible to be in the Democratic and Republican nominee debate.
Is that percentage of people who say that they are voting for him? What is that percentage?
That
do you know?
I don't really know. I was going to ask him that.
Oh.
But it looks like, you know, all eyes are on the 2016 Republican National Convention this week. We had reports of what was the report, Kim, just so
some
you
gunshots
know?
They're just reports of gunshots fired, shots fired near the Republican National Convention. They're saying no injuries. And really, that's all we're seeing right now.
Kim, stay here because we'll keep you posted.
Oh, absolutely. There was talk the other day. Ohio is an open carry state.
Yeah. You know,
all right. So they were trying to figure out if there was a way to suspend that during the convention because there were a lot of people in the area.
Was it the governor who was pitched to that?
Yeah, and I think
he said no. He said,
yeah,
go
they
ahead,
said
bring
no
them
can do. We can't. We can't change the law.
Interesting.
That yeah is very interesting.
Because now, nothing has happened, luckily, that we know about, but that could be a very huge decision if something's going down there in Cleveland right now.
Absolutely.
Well, we don't know if it's police fire or somewhere else, but we yeah will keep you posted. No need to turn away. And the Libertarian Party candidate, Gary Johnson, and William Weld, his running mate, I believe, was on with Steve Cochran earlier this morning. So you can always go to WGNradio.com and look that up, because really, until we kind of got pitched him that he's still in the building, I wouldn't even think about the Libertarian
well
candidate.
It's really tough because people have said, with all the unrest on both sides of the aisle this time around, on the Republican and the Democratic side, if there was only a viable third option, and this guy could, you know, for all we know, be that viable third option. I don't know enough about him. I did hear a bunch of the conversation with Steve earlier today. Mm-hmm. Both he and his running mate, Mr. Weld, seem like very intelligent guys. I wouldn't mind seeing him in the debates. I think that would be a very good thing.
Well, it would be interesting. Again, do your research before you cast your vote, because you get one vote and it does matter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the country that we all love. So you can listen to Gary Johnson on the podcast of the Steve Cochran Show. Go to WGNradio.com. Look up Steve Cochran and listen to that for yourselves, because we're not going to be talking to him.
Absolutely. All right.
Not because we don't want to, just because the schedule would not allow
it. The time did not allow it, and he heard our discussion about underalls and legs, pantyhose.
And the moving butt cheeks.
Right.
I mean, that
I heard this
anyone
in the hallway. Whoop, 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 and I heard him run. I don't blame him. We'll take a quick break and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kim, fill us in again. The excessive heat index starts on Friday. They say temperatures up in the 200s, 230s.
Yeah, pretty close. Wow. And you will definitely be able to fry an egg on the sidewalk.
Wow.
Have you tried that?
No, but I have seen people who have tried it.
I've seen people who have tried it, but have you actually been witness to it? Because
no.
I would like to try it.
Nope.
No. I think you'll have your chance on Friday.
Friday's your day.
You should do it right out
let's
here.
Let's do it. Do it.
Video
it and put it on your Facebook page.
All right,
I'll do
yeah
it.
No, actually, we spoke to Tom yesterday, and he said on Friday the heat index could get between 110 and 115.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good God, y'all.
My word. Did
yeah
he say my
and
word?
And he was actually very concerned because he said, you know, I don't remember the year, but several years ago when people died, it was in 95 because...
they had to put them in the refrigerated trucks at Taste of Chicago that year.
Yee. Did they do that?
Yes.
Did they really?
You don't remember that?
No.
I don't remember that, but
ooh
he said... His concern for this heat wave is the same as back then, was that the temperature never went down at night. And
right
that's the same case that's going to be this you know, over the next few days.
It has to go down a little bit, right? It can't
stay. Yeah, but I don't think enough that where it just really will cool off, or the inside of a home without air conditioning is going to cool down.
Oh, that's dreadful.
I know this sounds so, you know.
I'm sure it won't.
First person
problems. No, it won't. So
first world, not first person. Hey, Wendy, what do you think?
Right.
I remember when we didn't have air conditioning at our house.
Yes.
Because we had this giant General Electric fan that was at the bottom of the stairwell leading up to the bedrooms.
Was it an oscillating fan?
It was.
Right.
But we locked it in place because you just wanted to bring the cooler air from the lower level up to the front. And I remember the day we got central air conditioning, it was like I heard the angels sing.
Yes. Quite a difference, isn't it? Yep. It's nice to have the AC.
Yes, it is.
Yesterday, one of my daughters and I, Kylie and I, went to the Cubs game. The Cubs played the New York Mets last night, and it was very exciting, but I want to bring up a couple of quick things, if I may. It's the first time I had been to a Cubs game since they've reconfigured the outfield and put up giant scoreboards, and I wasn't sure that it was going to work with the landscape of Wrigley Field, and it does. It really does enhance the game tremendously. They did a really nice job of blending old and new. They didn't do such a good job over at Soldier Field.
You think?
Yeah.
You mean the bedpan and the pillars?
Yeah. Soldier Field looks to me like an ELO cover. Every time I drive past Soldier Field, like,
New world record.
I got to hear Turn to Stone. I need to hear Turn to Stone.
Oh, my God, it does.
It does, doesn't it? But at Wrigley, they've done, a really good job. And there's all kinds of changes still coming. There's a giant parking structure that they're building. And there's a hotel coming up across the street. And some guys are working on Kyle Schwarber. We walk past them as they're sandblasting Kyle Schwarber, trying to get him ready for next season. But just a couple of quick things, if I may. Thing number one. Now, I've been going to baseball games since I was 3 years old, and I experienced this again last night, and I still don't get it. There was a guy in front of us. I went with Kylie, and there was a guy sitting in front of us who stood up, sometimes with good reason, like sometimes the ball would be hit in the corner, so he would need to stand up to see where the ball was going. But then other times he would stand up, like if a pitch was thrown and it became a 2-2 count, he would just stand up to see the action better. Because I guess you can see the action better if you stand up.
Yeah, but the people behind you can't.
Right. That's my point.
Hear you.
I'm a fan of the experience. I want to be at the park when a game is going on. But when you're sitting through that for 3 hours of a guy just constantly standing up, and then when he did stand up for things, which was a lot, like after an allotted time, you go, okay, now you've stood up, now you would sit down. But he wouldn't. He would just stay standing up for a while.
See, that's the guy you have to move to the back row.
That's where that guy should
kidding.
Be, in the back row.
It happens like that at concerts sometimes, too. But, I mean, at a concert, I understand it, but you kind of, like, wait and see what the room does. You
right.
don't want to be the only person
right.
standing up. So was he looking around or aware of the fact that no one else was standing?
There were times, now I have to be honest, you've been to sporting events, there are times where a bunch of people stand up, and then you go, okay, it's time to stand up. But if everybody...
And sometimes I don't feel like standing up when they're standing up. You know
me,
what I mean?
I'm the same way. I could go through a whole game. I could go through a doubleheader and never stand up. Because I know, I understand the principle of seeing the action. If everybody remains seated,
right.
we'll all see. Everybody will see. But there wasn't time for me to explain that to the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
let's all remain seated throughout tonight's game and see if we don't enjoy ourselves more. I wanted to say that.
Was he right in front of you?
Yeah, he was right in front of us.
Did you say anything?
No. And I should have, right?
I don't know if you should have. It's like, I know there are people who pretend they're the only ones in the world.
Right.
But I don't, he wasn't being a jerk or
drunk.
He was
not being a jerk.
Or, you know?
I'm almost positive that if I would have asked him, he probably would have been better about it. But I'm trying to be more considerate, going, all right, the guy paid his money.
Exactly.
If he wants to stand up a lot, I guess you got to let him stand up a lot. But sometimes it was ridiculous. Sometimes he would stand, like there'd be a batter batting, and he'd stand up through like most of the guys at bat for no reason. It's just standing up watching.
Was he there by himself?
No, he was there with another guy.
Why didn't you tell the other guy to tell him to sit down?
Your friend is rude.
But the friend wasn't standing up?
No. He remained seated.
That's the friend's mission, then, to go, buddy, I think you
have to stop standing up.
Yeah.
Right. And I've been to a bunch of games where, and it's funny because this guy had a jersey on that said Rizzo on the back, but it was not Rizzo because he was playing in the
right.
game. I made sure it
Great
was not
Great deduction.
Him. Yeah. Well, that can't be Anthony Rizzo because Anthony Rizzo's at first base. What tomfoolery is this, I said.
Kylie must have a blast going to a game with you.
I've been to games where people will yell out the name on the jersey. Hey, Barrios, sit down. You know, you get a lot of that. And there were times where it would have been easy to just throw my voice and go, hey, Rizzo, sit down, Rizzo. Hey, guy behind me, was that you yelling that? No, somebody way in the back was yelling that. That was not me.
I don't know that you should have done it, but listener Bill has an idea for you. Hi, Bill.
Hello, how are you guys?
Good, Bill, what's up?
I would have taken just a little beer or something and poured it in his seat. Every time he sat down, he would sit in it.
But then he would have never sat down. He would have remained standing.
Nachos on pieces of napkins or something, and every time he sat down, more and more would build up on his pants or something.
Right.
Fun with it, you know? Make a game out of it.
Right. Have some fun.
But in all seriousness, listener Bill, what would you have done? Would you have said something?
I would have asked him. That's pretty annoying.
You know what? I should have. And as the game went on, I'm like, oh, I probably missed my window. This conversation should have happened 5 innings ago.
Right.
Because now he's just standing.
Maybe he was trying to start a wave. You know, they do the wave.
Maybe.
And just picked up on it.
That's so sad, a one-person wave.
What is sadder?
Nothing.
Nothing sadder.
Thank you, Bill.
But believe me, like, I'm doing the physics on it. I'm going, because I've been to so many games, and when you're a kid, it's the worst. Because now as an adult, like, I had a height advantage on this guy. So if he was standing and I was standing, I could easily see over his head. But did you ever go to a game when you were a little kid and all the adults stand up and you go, well, I'm out. I can't see anything now. I'm just staring at people, the backs of their legs.
It's a rite of passage. I mean, every kid's experienced that. And, you know, it's not a kid's world.
No, I know. I know that.
But now, can I just ask if you enjoyed the rest of the game? Because I know you, and I know I'd be sort of like this too. You kind of, that was your focus then instead of the game. Like,
I still had a great time, but I feel like I missed parts of the game because I did. Like, there were parts of the game I didn't see because Rizzo was standing all through the game.
Did you ask Kylie, what should I do here?
No, I'm trying now. Here's my thing is when one or both of the girls are with me.
Set an example.
I try to be a model citizen and do the best job I can. And she, because she was sitting on the other side where this Rizzo's friend was not standing at all. So she had a clear view of everything.
She didn't care about you. She could see. Didn't she say to you at all, can you see what this guy's standing?
No.
She didn't care about
you.
No,
she cared. I don't know. I keep thinking we'll all as a group figure out after a while, after you've been to so many sporting events. I was at a hockey game once, back in the old stadium, not where they are playing. I didn't see a minute of the game because there were people in front of me who stood through the entire. They didn't sit down once. I didn't see any of the game.
But you're right. They did pay for that ticket. It doesn't say no standing.
Right.
Although we all have to be taught like etiquette out in public.
Before the game, somebody should go out and explain to the crowd etiquette. You know, they do that in a movie. They say no cell phones or an airplane.
I want that job.
Right.
Hello, folks. Thanks for coming. Just a little cautionary tale before you get the game started here.
Right.
Please remain in your seats at all times.
You get a different guy. You get Javi Baez to come out before the game and explain to the crowd.
Do that on the Jumbotron or whatever.
Ballpark etiquette. Isn't
Turn your phones off.
Right. Right.
Don't touch the ball when it's in play.
Right. Right. If you're rooting for the other team, just know that the hateful venom that comes your way is just all in fun. Met fans. There were a couple Met fans by me. A couple of guys, obvious Met fans, because the Mets didn't have a lot of highlights yesterday. But every time they did do something well, which wasn't a lot, but a couple of times, they were all, and everybody around them is just like, yeah, that's fine. We're cool with that. People from out of town, that's nice. But Rizzo in front of me didn't play by the rules.
I think you did the right thing, though.
Yeah. Don't say anything. Just let it go. And then there's one other thing I want to bring up from last night's game. Let's take a quick break. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder.
You were at a Cubs game with one of your daughters, Kylie, last night.
Last night, yeah. Saw the Cubs beat the Mets 5-1.
Close personal look at Anthony Rizzo.
Yeah, it turns out it was not actually Anthony Rizzo. It was a man who apparently had borrowed one of Anthony's game jerseys and sat in front of us. And I got to see a lot of the jersey because he stood up through 78% of the game.
I just don't know what to do, Bill. I think you did the right thing not saying anything.
I didn't say anything.
But it would have bugged me and ruined my experience.
Yeah.
Bonnie, what would you have done?
Well, I took as a prize for a present for my dog sitters that are 9 and 13 years old, And I took them to Wrigley Field behind first base.
Wow.
Nice gift.
Behind first base, fifth row. Now, a friend of mine has those seats like, over 30 years.
What, did they cuddle with your dogs every night? You really rewarded them.
Well, I thought they deserved it. Their parents never, their father was a policeman, and they would never have been able to afford to buy tickets. Aww. The mother cried when I said, can I take them? She was always worried about taking them into the city, the kids going into the city with anybody without their parents. But anyway, the kids made up these great signs, and they were so excited. They were just unbelievable. And first time they were on the L and all that, it was just great. And we came in from Mundelein. But anyway, and they were so happy to be there. But behind us, now, of course, with the signs, you want to show off the signs,
right.
Of course, you know. So you stand up with the signs. And, Bill, I would have asked the guy to sit down,
yeah.
Who was in front of you. But
yeah.
I know what you mean. Nowadays, you're afraid. You know, you don't want to get anybody mad at you.
Right.
But there was a row of suits. These guys in suits who were on their phones almost the whole time, but they had a bag of peanuts. And I found that out after we were all of a sudden just getting peanuts just gently falling down on us. They weren't like aiming for our heads, but they were throwing.
Grown men were throwing peanuts at the kids.
To get you to sit down.
Grown men were throwing peanuts at my children.
Oh,
they
come
weren't
on.
My children, but those were my kids for the day. So I turned around and I said, now I'm 5 feet one, okay? I turned around and I said, you're at least 6 feet tall, guys. Come on. You can see over us and these little kids. This is their big day here. And look at their sign. But anyway, the kids got on TV.
Oh, wow. That's nice.
Did the peanut throwing suits get shown on TV too?
No, I hope no. You who? I don't know. I wasn't paying attention for them. I was just I kept getting texts from people saying, "We can see you on TV. You keep showing your sign."
That's so excellent. Good.
But I thought, you know, there's a time and a place. Here we have a couple of little kids with excited about their signs. This was 15 years ago, when the Cubs weren't doing all that well.
Wait,
so who needed to
we
see
have to
anyway.
Try to remember what those years were like. Hold on, I can't even remember this.
I can't either. I can't either. I'm sorry. I'm just in Cub nowness. I just
yeah.
I'm live for the moment.
In a glory. Guess
I get
what?
It.
But anyway, I wanted to share my little
thanks,
story
Bonnie.
With you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Bonnie. A sweet story.
I hope all those men are doing hard time now for hurling peanuts at little kids
in a different color.
There's no
suit.
Reason for that. Also, very quickly, we had a discussion last night. A guy on the Mets hit a home run. Wilmer Flores hit a home run late in the game. And then Kylie watches that production where the ball is hit, and then everybody in the stadium yells at the person who caught the ball, throw it back! And the person didn't seem to want to throw it back, but then when they did throw it back, they get huge applause from everybody. So Kylie said, I don't think I would have thrown it back. And I said, that's a good lesson in peer pressure. Because just because 42,000 people are yelling at you to do something, it doesn't mean you have to do it.
And the purpose of that is because it's not a Cubs home run.
Right. If it's a Cubs home run, you keep it. But if it's an opposing team's home run, you throw it back.
I'm keeping the ball if I get it.
But they were razzing this guy who caught it. They're just like all over him. And then he finally did throw it back.
Would you throw it back?
I don't think I would. I think I would keep it.
If you got a ball in your hands, you don't have
keep
to throw it,
it.
Back.
Good advice. Solid advice, Wendy. All right, let's take a quick break. News is next, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And, you know, try as I may, I tried to have a happy home.
Of course you do. Who doesn't? Everybody does.
I know, but it's not always happy. Not that it's sad, but we just have a really loud house.
Loud how? What do you mean by loud?
Well, I was asking you this off the air. When I was growing up, my mom would say, go tell your brother it's dinner time.
Sure.
And instead of walking upstairs, it'd be like, Chris, dinner's ready.
And then she'd say,
Wendy, stop yelling.
I could have done that.
Right.
That's the usual answer to that.
But we're a loud house. I was brought up that way. My mom was Italian. A lot of yelling. Not like mean yelling, but a lot of yelling.
Sure.
It's never quiet, and I want my house to be a sanctuary.
Oh, good luck with that.
How's your house? Do you guys raise your voices?
We're a little quieter. Yeah, there is excitement, but it's subdued excitement.
Well, we have an expert on the line with us who hopefully can help me. Obviously, you don't need the help, which is typically your case all the time.
Yeah.
Perfect family, perfect wife, perfect daughters.
I will
daughters.
Be on break during this segment.
Joanne Miller is on the line with us. Joanne, how are you today?
I am great. And it's interesting that you're just talking about how your house has been so loud, because I have just sent off about half of our family group back to Colorado. They have been here to our home. We've had 23 people for the last 5 days, all of my kids, grandkids, and it's been very chaotic. So I know loud.
But loud isn't necessarily bad, is it? You've written this book, Creating a Haven of Peace, and I definitely need your help, and I'm sure some listeners do, so that's why we're talking to you today. So loud isn't necessarily bad.
Loud is not necessarily bad. In fact, it can be really exciting when it's a good, comfortable, secure, loving laughter and interaction. I just got a text just before the kids even pulled out of the driveway from our oldest grandson, who's 21, and Caleb says, "Nana, I had such a great time, and it was so fun, much fun playing games." That's fun. A peaceful home doesn't necessarily mean just a quiet home. It means more than anything, a home full of love and unconditional love, no matter what.
But Joanne, or Nana, if you'll allow me, where are you? What state are you in right now?
Mental or
actual? geographical, which state?
geographically, I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
You're in Tennessee. There are nights where you can hear Wendy's family there in Nashville,
we
right?
We were just there two weeks ago, so you could have heard us. I'll tell you the truth, and I will say this. I have two teenage boys who couldn't be farther apart in grades. One's going to be entering senior year of high school. One's going to be an eighth grader. They're at very different points in their life right now where they get along for 1 minute, and then they bicker and they bother each other. And when I was walking up into our hallway of our hotel in Nashville, Tennessee, I could hear them by the elevators.
You could.
They weren't really fighting,
just talking.
But they were getting excited and yelling and talking about, I want to watch this show. No, they weren't really fighting, but that's what I mean. We're surrounded by loud. So it's not always unconditional love, but we definitely like each other.
Certainly. But it doesn't matter how much you love one another, there's still going to be differences and there are still going to be fights, so to speak, although I talk about that in the book, and I think there are ways to learn how to fight. I don't even like that word. To me, that's a kind of an ugly word. We can have intense discussions and discussions with a lot of depth and emotion, but it doesn't necessarily have to be a fight, and hopefully shouldn't escalate to that. That's different when you've got kids in the house, though. The kids are learning a lot by what they see the parents do. That's the biggest role models they have in their
lives. We do not fight over television shows, my husband and I. We do not. I don't, like, give him a purple nurple just to get his attention.
No, but I have to agree that you are role models for your children in many ways, and that I think that's important to remember. And certainly, if you want a haven of peace, there is some quiet there, and that needs to be respected in the home. With our children growing up, we usually allowed them to scream and yell and carry on all they wanted to outside, but when they came home, they needed to be respectful. But this is a home for everybody to be comfortable in, and if you're comfortable with all the chaos and loudness, that's okay. It's not like there's a right way and a wrong way in that. It has to do with the personality of the family structure.
Joanne, you've been involved in a marriage that's lasted a good long time. Tell everybody how long you've been married for.
Yes, Daniel and I have been married for 48 years.
That's sensational.
That's great.
Now, you just mentioned you don't believe in fights. You don't like the word fights. What for the discussions that you and Daniel have had, what seemed to be the most intense?
Well, I'm not going to say I haven't ever been angry, because that's
impossible.
So untrue. Yeah, it's impossible.
Right.
And I'm sure that he can say the same thing. One of the things that we've kind of always had as a rule in our home is that we want every situation to be a win-win for both parties or for everybody involved. Sometimes that means compromising. Sometimes that means long discussions, and those long discussions can take several days. But typically, if I get ticked off at Dan for something that that I feel has been unfair, or he's reacted in a way that I don't like or whatever, I usually give myself a little cooling off period to really think and analyze it. I used to stuff a lot. I don't do that so much anymore. I really confront him quickly.
Wait, what does that mean?
Well, you used to what a lot?
Stuff a lot?
Stuff.
What does that mean?
I would just not say anything because, okay, I'm thinking this is just trivial. This is trivial. It's not a big deal. I will just keep it inside me, and I'm not gonna talk about it. So I don't talk about it until I've done that enough times that one tiny little thing sets me off and I explode like a volcano.
Oh,
that's
wow.
My husband. He does the same thing. He doesn't want to complain, but then he like keeps it on account.
Right.
And then all of a sudden the explosion happens.
Oh. Yeah. That happens with a lot of people. That's not uncommon. Either that or it's the opposite where you spout off at everything.
That's me. Hello.
Oh.
We've got, I talk quite a bit in the book about personality styles. I think it's really, really important to understand the personality styles of each member of the family, because it helps you not only to understand that person better, but to also understand how you can respond in a variety of situations with that individual and make it work and make it be a happy thing rather than total chaos or disconnect. And that's something you definitely don't want.
Sure.
And I think the most important word that you bring up in the world in the book, which, by the way, we have Joanne Miller on the line, and the book is called Creating a Haven of Peace, and is respect. You need to respect one another. You have to respect,
yes,
you know, that other people have differences. It's bad, though, like, you know, if Bill and I disagree on a guest idea or whatever, I treat Bill with more respect than I do at home, because it's like I'm comfortable with my husband and kids. So you have to sometimes learn to not sugarcoat it, but be respectful about it.
You really do, Wendy, and you bring up a good point. In fact, you bring up a memory that was not all that great for me. Back many years ago, when one of my children was about probably 5-6 years old, he heard me talking to a friend. The phone had rung, and I picked it up, and I was talking to this friend, and then I hung up, and he looked at me, and he said, "Mommy, why do you talk nicer to them than you do to us?"
We always called it in our family, the stranger is always right, because you're always willing to back the stranger and defend them or speak with your, "Hello, this is Wendy," but at home, you hear this kind of voice from me.
Yeah. It's important to recognize that you have that tendency. And if so, then to talk about it. Talk about it as a family. One of the things I bring out in the book, and I think is really a helpful tool in the household, is to do a personal mission statement and a family mission statement. What do you want your family to stand for? What do you want what values do you want to have in the family? How do you want to work together? What is acceptable? What is not acceptable? It can be a few lines or it can be paragraphs, but do it together so you all agree on it. Then once everybody has said, yeah, this is what we want our family to be, then when somebody violates that, you can always go back to saying, you know, did this, what do you think about this? How did this jive with the mission statement that we did? And they can decide for themselves if they were right or wrong.
This reminds me of when the Bradys used to have meetings in the den.
Yeah.
Remember that?
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to problem solve as a unit.
Right.
And that's what you have to do.
You really do. If you do, you know, so often you find families where the parents keep everything from the children, and they really try to keep everything on an even keel and not really let them know what's going on in the family. And that can be good to a certain extent, but also I really believe that the success of the family unit, much like in a business, depends a lot on how much you involve everybody else.
And kids are too smart, don't you think?
Yes.
Kids pick up. They're too intuitive. Yes. You know,
like if one parent loses a job, I'm not saying you shouldn't burden your child and say, you know, we're not going to be able to go out to restaurants as often. But you certainly shouldn't not tell them. You got to say, you know, dad lost his job.
And you're going to have to sell your dollies. We have no other alternative.
I think it's more shocking and hurtful if all of a sudden, like maybe you hear it from a neighbor kid. Like,
oh, yeah.
My mom told me that your dad lost your job. What?
Right.
I totally agree. I think that we don't give our kids credit enough for being as smart and as intuitive as they really are. From a very young age, they know if mom and dad are having some problems. They know if things are not going smoothly or even if a career is not going smoothly. They can pick up on those little things because much as we like to delude ourselves into thinking that we can hide it so well, that usually is not the case. And I don't really think that it's healthy for the family in general.
Joanne Miller on the line with us, and you can pick up her book, Creating a Haven of Peace. I am going to have to read through this very slowly and carefully. We're going to take a quick break. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. And when we come back, I want to talk about the last section of Joanne's book. And she asked for comments from her three children. I want her to explain that next.
Beautiful. All right, that's coming up. Stick around. If you want to call in, please do. 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, the dynamic of a family. What is it? Different personalities living together. I fessed up that our family's a little on the loud side. Joanne Miller on the line with us. Her book is Creating a Haven of Peace. Someone has texted us and said, oh, great, so you're welcome to have all your chaos and loud children in your own home, but whatever happened to raising our children to be peaceful and create that for others in public? My kids are fine in public.
Is that weird, though? Why is that,
but,
do you think?
Joanne, don't you think it's because, you know, one is comfortable in their own home, and then you let your guard down?
I think that's true. I think that, but let me also put a caveat there. Sometimes I think we have a tendency to have that Popeye mentality. Well, I am what I am, and you can accept me like that, or not. And I think that we have to sometimes put on have rules and regulations in our home that also jive with what we do outside the home, because it's a matter of respect. And we get so comfortable sometimes that we think being polite or being respectful isn't necessary in the home. And I think that if we carry that out in the home, throughout the home, if it's taught there and practiced there, then when the children or the family is in public, it tends to be the very, very same, sometimes even better. I know that I wanted my kids to be accepted in other people's homes. I was really adamant about that. I did not want them to see us coming and say, oh, here they are again with the kids. I saw too much of that kind of behavior in my background, and I didn't want to emulate that in my own home.
And speaking of your kids, we haven't received the book yet, so I don't know exactly what it says, but talk about how you asked your kids about comments about their years growing up with you and your husband. Tell us a little about that.
Well, they grew up in an entrepreneurial home. My husband had all kinds of businesses, some very good and some not so good. And so we had a lot of ups and downs, and that is typical in an entrepreneurial home. They've grown up to be entrepreneurs themselves because that's the life that they saw. But one of the things I asked each of the children, they knew what I was writing about. They've lived this. They've heard me speak about it and write about it so many times through the years. And so I asked each one of them to please just write a little bit about what they think about when they think about their growing up years. And I didn't let any of them know what the other wrote. So I wanted it just from them without any bias. And I was just, I was in tears. I was so thrilled with the things that they brought to the forefront, mostly revolving around how we respected them and they learned to respect us in turn. I know Kevin, our oldest, wrote about peace has few rules but definite boundaries. And so we did, because in our home we usually said yes unless it was something that was either immoral or harmful in some way.
And so there weren't a lot of rules, but we definitely did have some boundaries. And Jared wrote about relationships and how we learn to respect relationships so thoroughly that that trumps everything. And then Ashley talked about how their whole world is the school. We always had everything as a learning experience. I homeschooled the kids, loved doing that. She's doing the same. All of our grandkids, I have 14, well, actually, if you count newly adopted members, I have now 15 grandchildren and even one great-grandchild.
Wow.
And that they're all of them have been homeschooled in some form or fashion, and none of those homes have television. No, they don't have cable.
Right. Hang up, Wendy.
I gotta go.
Hang up on this woman.
Yeah, I don't. That's something that sounds very foreign to us.
You know, it is foreign. And what happens is we sound like Little House on the Prairie, and then we should be wearing long dresses and living on the farm and all of that. That's not true. We have a big business. My husband has been the author of quite a few very successful books, and we are we're really fairly sophisticated out here, but we've chosen to do things as a family that brings adventure and fun to our lives and do things together and communicate together rather than sitting in front of the tube.
Sure.
We have TVs to watch movies, and we have movie nights and that kind of thing.
Oh.
But to just sit down, I can't tell you what's on a regular basis on TV shows.
But it's nobody else's business what goes on in your house. And obviously you have achieved greatness as a parent and a mother, according to what your kids have said in the end of this book. So you've done your job, and everybody's got to stop judging other people. That's all I have to say.
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. And I'll tell you what, I was talking to someone just recently. Again, one of the things that made me least judgmental and learn so much about the way that we do get so judgmental is doing prison ministry and hearing some of the stories of the homes that some of the prisoners have come from. And it makes your home look pretty good. So everybody has their own story. There's no doubt about it.
And respect is the operative word, which I'm going to show a little more respect.
Aretha Franklin was right, Wendy.
R-E-S-P-E-C-T. I'm going to show that
Find
to my
out.
Husband and the new tortoises, the kids,
yeah.
The dog. Not in that order.
In that order, I bet. Joanne, great to talk to you. Congratulations not only on the book, Creating a Haven of Peace, which, by the way, I got the books on tape version. It was so quiet I couldn't hear it. I tried everything. It was impossible to hear. But congrats on the book and on the long marriage and the happy family. That's great news.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
Yeah, how do we get your book, Creating a Haven of Peace? You have a website?
Yes, I do. Go to Joanne, JoanneF, as in Fairchild, Miller, joannefmiller.com. And if you go, as soon as you get on that homepage, you can click on a link that will take you to five steps to making your home that haven of peace. And that's free, and I would love to have your listeners go to that.
And me. I'm going to read that a couple times over.
Do that. It's also available on Amazon and in your local bookstores.
Well, thank you so much, and continued success with the family. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
Take care, Joanne. A quick break, and then some news. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I am having a hot flash, or it's really hot in here.
Could be both.
Are you sweating?
No,
are
not even
glistening?
A little bit. No. Everything's in order for me. Are you having a hot flash?
I thought I was finished with my hot flashes.
No, round two.
Oh, God.
Here they come
that's
again.
All I need.
Kevin, some warm ginger ale for Wendy, please.
Why warm?
Because I drink all the cold ginger ale. We only have warm left. Sorry.
I need your expertise on something.
How can I help?
Well, Netflix, first of all, they scared everybody that you couldn't share passwords.
Right.
But you can. With your family members.
Right.
It just depends on your plan. If you have four streams, you can share it with four family members.
Sure, I get that.
Four
right.
devices can be streaming at the same time is what that means.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've raised their prices a little bit.
But just by, because we talked about this earlier with Ashley Escather from CNET, it's only like $1 or $1.50 a month,
it
right?
It was.
Has it gone up even
people
more?
People who have been on Netflix, I don't even know how much we pay a month, if I can tell you the truth. Jim handles that, so I don't know. It was like $9.99 or something, and she said that people who had been longtime Netflix members just went up a dollar, but only for a year. And then I think it's $19.99.
Oh, yeah. If it goes up $10 a month, that's considerable. But if it's just a dollar a month, that's not.
I hope that won't break anybody's bank. But it's not. It's going up.
More.
Yeah. And it's still pretty excellent, in my opinion, although I have to figure out, because between Hulu and Amazon Prime, why do I even have cable? And do you still call it cable?
Well,
it isn't cable. I don't know
what
it is.
No, you could still have either cable or satellite. You would probably have one or the other.
I guess it's cable then.
I don't know.
All right. Well, Netflix has put together the 100 best movies of July.
These are currently showing on Netflix?
Yes.
All right.
They've added a few films for July that made the best movies on Netflix list.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to run these past you because...
Sure. I'll tell you if you should see them or not.
Well, I've seen... I can't get do the whole 100.
Okay, that's all right.
Do you want to know two of them. Do you want to know what 100 is? 100?
What's in last place? Yeah.
Insomnia.
Oh, that's really good.
Al Pacino.
And Robin Williams.
Oh.
He's a bad guy. And Robin Williams. Robin Williams went through this period where he played a bad guy in is it 1 hour photo? Is that
I
what it's
loved
called?
Him in that.
All right. Well, then see him in this too, because he's a really bad guy in this, in Insomnia.
All right. I'll put that.
You
on
would
my
like
list.
Insomnia.
Okay, that's Insomnia that came out in 2002. Again, Netflix has put together the 100 best movies on Netflix for this month,
uh-huh.
and this month is running out. I was going to do like the top 50, the few of
sure.
the top 50, but right. I have to mention, 58 is Nightcrawler, which I just recently seen.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Nice English.
Did you just saw it a couple months ago? Oh, you seen it? Yeah.
I just recently saw it, with Jake Gyllenhaal, who's awesome. Renee Russo, who's, I hadn't seen in a while.
Isn't she good in that? Yeah.
That movie is fantastic.
Jake Gyllenhaal plays, and I know he got very upset because the best word to describe him in this movie is creepy. He's really creepy,
totally.
But even he would say, all right, enough, I know, I get it. But he is. He's like a really creepy guy who chases down accidents and videotapes them for the news. He's really
good
at it.
To make money from it.
Yeah.
And it's he really changes his ways. It's really good. And
yeah.
if listeners haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. But I need to ask you these things because I don't see movies very often.
All right. I'll help you.
I wanted to do the top 50, but these 58, 57, and 56 are three fantastic movies. Fatal Attraction is 57.
Oh, sure. That's a classic.
Sammy Hagar was in it.
He was.
Oh, is that Glenn Close?
I think Glenn Close was in it.
Oh, didn't he look like...
They look a little similar.
That's the curly-haired
right.
Sammy Hagar. Really,
right.
That is a great movie.
But I wouldn't trust Sammy Hagar around a rabbit, would you, after seeing Fatal Attraction?
No. 56 is American Beauty, one of my favorite...
Boy, is that good.
Isn't
With
it?
Kevin Spacey.
Okay, so these are in the 50s. Wait till you hear like the top 10.
American Beauty's really like almost a perfect movie.
It is amazingly good.
And there's a couple of creepy guys in that, too. Wes Bentley plays his neighbor. He's a real creepy guy. And what's his next-door neighbor's name, who's Wes Bentley's dad? Chris something. He plays a military guy in this.
Oh, he's good
he's
in
really
this.
Good.
I don't know the names. Yeah. I expected you to know all this.
I'll think of it.
Your internet movie data bill.
Yeah, that's
IMDb.
Me. Right, that's me.
55 is Chasing Amy. I'm a big Kevin Smith fan. I kind of liked that, Chasing
yeah.
Amy.
It's got its moments.
Getting into the top 50, some of them I don't know. Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah, with Kurt Russell.
John Carpenter movie. That's number 50.
That's all right.
Force Majeure.
I don't know what that is.
2014.
I think that's a body part. I'm pretty sure if I know my Latin, I think that may be a part of your body.
I don't know what that is. It's about a seemingly good dad who makes a bad split decision while on vacation with a seemingly perfect family. All right, now see, that sounds good to me, but I don't know who's in it. I don't see any.
I think it may be foreign. Is it? Does it say if it's foreign or not?
It's by Ruben Östlund, and there's an umlaut.
It's foreign.
Okay.
I'm not saying it can't be good. It's
right.
probably even better.
If it's subtitles, though, I can't watch it.
You won't watch a subtitled movie? Really?
Last movie I saw with subtitles was Das Boot.
We're going back a ways.
What, like 40 years? 30 for sure.
About 30 years.
I couldn't do it again. You're missing all the action. Even in Orange is the New Black, when I have to read what they write when the Hispanics are speaking and they put it in English.
They subtitle it, yeah.
Yeah, I can't. I want to see what's going on. I don't want to read.
I'll make you a deal. I'll come to your house for a bag of Starbursts, and I'll read you the movie while it's on. Would you do that?
Because, honestly, if you're reading the subtitles, you're not seeing what's happening on the screen.
But after, I would say after like 2 or 3 minutes, it just becomes part, like, it's hard to acclimate for a minute or two, but after a while you go, okay, this is how it is. I have to read the movie. And it doesn't take long.
Listen to what you just said. I have to read the movie.
I know. It seems like it would be a long, arduous process, but it's not. Like, you accept it after a couple minutes. It blends in. You can glance down. You can see the words. You glance up and go, okay, I see what the guy's doing.
But don't you want to look at the screen in awe and see in every corner what's going on?
Ideally.
How can you look when you're reading?
It's not that hard. I would tell you, I would rather, like with foreign films, I would far rather see a movie that's subtitled than dubbed.
Yeah, I guess.
Because that never works.
All right. 49 is Good Will Hunting.
Love
it. Speaking of Robin Williams.
Yeah. That's really good.
You know, some of these movies, I think, are like, if you've never seen them, these are a must-see. And I very rarely say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris Cooper, by the way, is the actor in American Beauty, who's one of the many creepy characters in that movie.
He puts creep on the map.
Yeah.
He's really creepy in that. Very good. All right, we'll take a break. Netflix has put together their 100 best movies on Netflix for the month of July. And
you mentioned some good ones. You're only in the 50s, and you've mentioned a bunch of good ones.
I know, but the top 10 are just, to me, they fizzle out.
Oh, like, really?
We're mentioning the good ones in the 50s.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's why I want your opinion.
All right. I'm here for you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right. We're talking about the 100 best movies from Netflix for this month. But first, I'm going to tell you to get the stories that make the city with unlimited digital access to award-winning Chicago Tribune News. Become a member today at chicagotribune.com. All right. There are a couple I want to throw your way. The Running Man was 97 in this top 100.
With Schwarzenegger?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you think that was a good movie?
It's all right. It's just okay. Richard Dawson's good in it.
He's in there?
Yeah, Richard Dawson's
in it. I miss
him. He plays the host of The Running Man Show.
Oh, I
Some
do
of his
remember
finest
that.
Film work.
95 is 16 Candles. That's a great movie.
Like that a lot.
Gladiator, 89.
Love Gladiator.
Did you really?
Yeah. That's really good. You didn't like it?
No. Jim loved it. I was watching it. It was okay.
I think I felt like they were following me around with a camera.
You are funny.
It felt very autobiographical to me.
83 is Beverly Hills Cop. That's not that great.
That's all right. Yeah,
The Big Short is 81. I've not seen that yet. That's good.
I'm trying to remember what The Big Short is. Is
Stephen Carell, Adam McKay.
Oh, yeah, from last year.
Yeah.
Big Short's really good.
All right, I'll put that on my list.
Yeah, that's well worth seeing. You'd like Big Short.
75 is Aaron Brockovich. It's a good movie.
That's all right, yeah.
All right, though. These aren't fantastic.
Right.
Mystic River, Clint Eastwood.
I don't know that I've seen Mystic
Lawrence
River.
Lawrence Fishburne, Laura Linney, Marcia Gay Harden, Kevin Bacon, Tim Robbins.
Oh, yeah. And Sean Penn, right?
Yeah, I haven't seen that. Is
it
good?
Oh, yeah. It's pretty disturbing.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah, I think you'd like it.
62 is Clueless.
Clueless is funny.
It's all right.
That's before anyone knew Paul Rudd was Paul Rudd. He was in that.
Oh, you're right. Still cute back then.
Although,
but
when you think about it, the ending, I shouldn't say the ending. But for people who have seen it, and I won't give away the ending is a little suspect. When you think about...
I don't remember it.
When you think about the relationship of the characters that get together at the end, there's two people at the end that get together, and it's a little suspect. Do you know what I mean?
It's a cute girl, not a cute guy?
No.
Oh, okay. Then
no,
I don't
it's
know.
Way
I don't
weirder
remember.
Than that. Way weirder than that.
Is there a monkey involved?
I wish there was a monkey involved.
41, and I'm skipping around because some of them I've not even heard of. Clerks, honestly, one of my favorite movies.
Do you like that? Yeah.
I really love that movie, Kevin Smith.
I've seen it twice, and both times I was kind of just nonplussed by it.
It's a coming of
age movie.
Wanted
to like it a lot more. Oh, yeah, I know.
That I
yeah.
learned a lot from.
Oh, you did? Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
I love that movie. Number 39, again, these are the top 100 flicks on Netflix to watch for this month. The Sting.
Love The Sting.
It is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's great,
time.
Isn't it?
Great soundtrack.
Yeah. It's so good. That's all Scott Joplin music, or mostly Scott Joplin music.
I bought that album by myself. It's not like a mom bought it for me or anything.
You got it
I
yourself.
I had to have it, and I listened to every song on that record and did dances to every one of them.
Could you do one of those dances for me now?
Nope.
I would love to see a ragtime dance.
Those were in my flapper days.
So you were an 8-year-old girl that wanted ragtime music.
I
in
just
your home.
Loved it. I could not get enough of that record. I wore that record out.
Yeah. Now, my one of my best friends and my brother and I, after seeing the movie, would act out scenes from it. And it's strange because we didn't have a copy of the script. There was no internet to go to get a copy of the script. So it was just whatever was in our memory, we would go. We wore these suits. I don't know where we got these suits.
The men's warehouse, of course.
I guess so. And we would dress like the characters in the movie. Bobby Hooker, right? Is that his name? Or Johnny Hooker? Johnny Hooker.
I just remembered the Hooker part.
I think that's what made us, that's why we did it. We were motivated by the funniness of his name. And then we would act out little scenes from the movie. And then I've told you this, the guy who wrote it, David Ward, I got to know doing Major League. It's the same guy who wrote and directed Major League. So I would just pepper him with sting questions all the time.
All right, well, that's cool.
I love that movie.
Major League is not on here, and I'm disappointed.
That's a mistake.
Well, maybe Netflix isn't showing it.
They should show it.
36 is Jurassic Park, the original.
Yeah, great. I can see movie. That being on there. I like that.
That's a great movie. Lethal Weapon is number 34.
Lethal Weapon's really good.
That is a really good movie. To Kill a Mockingbird is 32.
Oh, is that great?
That is one of the best movies. Gregory Peck is so good. It's really great.
I think might be Gregory Peck's greatest film role, and it's so well written.
Atticus Finch,
and you get Robert Duvall before anyone knew who he was.
Boo Radley.
He played Boo Radley.
I'm talking literary stuff with you because I read the book in high school.
Isn't that a great book?
Are you confused that it's me sitting here?
Harper Lee is the author. Boy, is that a great story, great movie.
And which celebrity couple named one of their daughters Harper after Harper Lee?
It's an actress, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And married to an actor.
Oh, I'm blanking on who it is.
Demi Moore and Bruce Willis.
Oh, is that? No, they don't have a daughter named Harper.
They don't have a Harper?
No.
I know they have.
They're all their kids are named Tallulah, I think.
No, there's one Tallulah.
Rumor.
And I thought Harper was the other one named after.
I don't think they have a kid named Harper. I'm pretty sure not.
Maybe it's Atticus.
They have a kid named Atticus?
I thought it was something from To Kill a Mockingbird that they named their kid. Sling Blade is number 30.
Rumor, Scout, and Tallulah. So
Scout
was in. That's one of the two kids. So that makes sense.
You're right.
Yeah. Right. Circle gets the square. Charlie Weaver, please.
Sling Blade is number 30.
That's
a great movie.
Isn't it?
That's
Billy Bob Thornton really just blowing it up. He's so good.
I'd like to rewatch that. These are things I would.
He's so disturbing.
It
in
is.
That.
He's really good.
Yeah.
That's when I thought he'd amount to something.
He did.
I mean, I know.
He really, without that movie, he was like a bit actor. He'd play parts in TV shows and movies and stuff. And all of a sudden, he became a leading man because of Carl in that movie.
He was great.
Yeah.
Django Unchained.
I like that a lot. That's so good.
It's a kung fu film.
Kind of. It's a Western. It's Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, I haven't seen that. The Usual Suspects.
Really good.
That's number 27.
Have you never seen that?
Yeah, I saw that.
You did see it?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I think I saw
that. Benicio del Toro, Kevin Spacey.
Oh, yeah. That's a really good movie.
One of the Baldwins who is an Alec.
Steven?
Daniel? I think it is Steven. Yeah, it's Steven.
Number 24 is Shakespeare in Love. Never saw it.
It's good. It's all right.
Is it like the top 25 when you've brought up The Sting and all these other movies?
Yeah, it seems to be going in reverse instead of forward.
23, Cinema Paradiso.
You need to see that. That would be...
I just got excited.
I know you don't like foreign films. That would be the one that would change your mind.
All right. I'll watch it. It's on Netflix.
I'll lend it to you.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, it's on Netflix.
I can watch it. Pirates of the Caribbean: The Curse of the Black Pearl is 21.
That they rated that one higher than Cinema Paradiso.
See what I mean? And we can take a break, do some news, but can we come back and do the top 20? Because I don't understand. I think they did these backwards. Like maybe 100 was the top one.
Because the ones you just mentioned are all really or mostly really strong movies. I'm shocked that it
tails
off.
They get weaker as they get to the top 10.
All right, let's do some news, and then we'll cover that. If you want to jump in, why don't you? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I love the Go-Go's.
Yeah, what's not to love? It's the Go-Go's. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. We're discussing a list of films that Wendy found. These are currently on Netflix. They say they're the 100 best, and you've been reading them from about the middle of the list on. And so far, most of the movies you've mentioned have been classics, but you say it gets kind of weak as they get to their top 10, huh?
It does. Let's see. The top 20, Laura, Otto Preminger, 1944. I don't know that movie.
I've not seen that.
Maybe falling in love with dead people is just an occupational hazard of being an investigative detective in New York City.
Maybe.
All right, I'm in. I mentioned 19 is Beasts of No Nation.
I have not seen that, but people close to me have seen it and have loved it and keep telling me I need to see it, but I've not seen it
yet. Do you have Netflix?
Yeah, all right. I should see it.
All right, I've just circled the ones that I want to see. I circled that. Back to the Future, 1985, the original.
The first one?
Really great.
Yeah, it was.
That's number
and
18.
And very prophetic.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it?
Donald Trump.
Right.
Cubs almost winning.
Yeah.
16 is Full Metal Jacket. That's a great
terrific
movie.
Yeah, it is. Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah. 15, E.T.
Yeah.
It's a great movie.
It's hard to quibble with E.T.
Okay, but listen, now we're getting into the top 10, okay? Yeah. And they weaken.
So these should all be good. Every one of these should be a classic.
Yeah, we're still, 14, The Exorcist. That's a great movie.
Really scary. Great story.
And now we'll go with the top 10. You ready?
Yeah.
Trainspotting.
Trainspotting's really good. You'd like Trainspotting.
I saw Trainspotting. It was okay.
It didn't do much for you?
A lot of people with bad teeth.
Well, yeah.
There was that. Ewan McGregor. I guess that is a pretty good movie.
I think that was his first big movie, Ewan McGregor, I think. I can't remember him
a
in
young
anything.
Ewan McGregor, Kelly MacDonald, and Robert Carlyle.
Yeah.
It's about...
Robert Carlyle usually plays a villain in, I think, in every movie he's ever been in. He's been a James Bond villain.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, it's about heroin addicts, and, you know, it's because that's when I think heroin, that's what I think of heroin, not like some suburban kid who is...
You think of the Trainspotting version.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Number 9, The Princess Bride.
That's a classic.
I've never seen it.
Oh, is that... You've never seen The Princess Bride. When do you have to see The Princess Bride? It's so good.
It's called a family-friendly kissing movie.
Well, yeah, but it's more than that. It's not, I mean, that's not the way to sell it. William Goldwyn, is that who's behind that?
Rob Reiner directed it.
Yeah, but I think the book is William Goldwyn. And then, yeah, Rob Reiner did direct it. We had Cary Elwes on the show,
yeah.
And you told him you loved that movie.
No, I didn't. I never saw it.
I thought you told him you loved it.
Well, I just he was think on I neglected to say that.
All right.
Amelie.
Yeah, Amelie is a great... That's a foreign film, too, and it's really good.
All right, I got to talk
to... That's a quirky French girl. That's a crazy, quirky French girl.
All right, I'll like it.
That's foolproof. Yeah, it's subtitled, but go with it.
All right, well, Sue's going to tell us a little story about subtitles. Go ahead, Sue.
Hi, great to hear you, Bill and Wendy. Thank you,
Sue.
Yes, you know, for years, there's a lot of really great foreign films, and I enjoy foreign films, but sometimes, yes, I, like you said, Wendy, I would be deterred from going because you couldn't see all the action and so on. And a couple of years ago, I met who is now a very good friend of mine, a blind person that was born congenitally blind since birth. And one day he said to me, "Well, you want to go to a movie?" And I was kind of apoplexed about it. I would have never, you know, said that. And he's like, "Yeah, they have audio to script now." And again, it's more of the recent films, of course. But all I can say is that it has been a really, really positive experience for me. And it's made me view things very differently. Like the
well,
very
wait, hang on, Sue. So, I just have a question. Yeah. Audio to script or whatever. So he puts headphones on and it has somebody narrating the subtitles of it?
Yes, you know, it's a really amazing thing. I've listened to it a couple of times. I haven't listened to a full film. I know, if I can say the name of a theater company,
sure.
AMC.
Yeah.
AMC is very good about this. And audio to script, sometimes they... I don't want to take up too much of your time. Sometimes things, I know the employees, or sometimes they get things confused between they try to give us a device one time that was for people that are hard of hearing or close to being deaf, and that's a different kind of device.
Oh, okay.
But an audio descriptive, again, there's some different terminology, but the very first film, I'm close to 50, that's neither here nor there, and he's close to 30, but anyway.
Ooh, good job.
Thank you.
Wow.
Okay, we'll leave that alone. Anyway, so with the very first film we went to see, it was that Fast and Furious, that latest one last year. And I thought, oh my goodness, in my head, I was like, how the heck is that going to be described? And so he goes, yeah, this was my first time using this device and going to see this, and that was the first film we saw. And he was like, wow.
It's a game changer. Well, it's not just, they don't just give you the dialogue. They explain what's happening on the screen. They narrate kind of what's happening on the screen.
That's awesome.
And like I said, Wendy, I mean, this is a very positive call for me. It has made me really think differently about reading subtitles. And you know what else, too? I don't know if this helps at all or not, but when we're driving the car, when we're driving that...
Yeah, you're driving, in, right.
No, what I mean is, you know, you're looking on the side, in the rearview mirror and the side mirror in the back, and you're still paying attention to what's going on in all your sides and in front.
Yeah, that's true.
So I thought that kind of, all I can say is that kind of really has changed my thinking about things, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense.
It makes
sense.
Total sense, Sue. Thank you very much. And I will definitely give it a try, because you said I should watch the impish French girl. What is Amelie?
You should see Amelie. She's a quirky French girl. That's a foreign film you would love. Cinema Paradiso, which you mentioned. And I'm going to mention a third one for people who are skittish about foreign films and don't know if they'll adapt to reading the subtitles. There's a movie called The Intouchables, not The Untouchables, The Intouchables. It's a French movie, maybe 5 or 6 years old. And it's about a guy who cares for a quadriplegic. And I know they're making an American version of it, and I applaud them for that. It's a great story. But you need to see the French version of it. It's fantastic in every way. It's such a great storyline. Parts of it will make you laugh out loud hysterically. Parts of it will make you cry like a little baby. It's just such a great story. It's called The Intouchables. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
I wrote it down. I'm sure other people did too. Seven, The Thin Blue Line.
Errol Morris, yes. Is that the guy's name who made that? That's a documentary. That's an interesting story. If you're a documentary fan, and I know you are, I'd put that high up on the list. It's really good.
Six is Roman Holiday.
That's an older film, not
Gregory
a bad
movie. Gregory Peck, Audrey Hepburn.
Yeah.
Nah.
No?
I don't know.
Don't want to see that?
That's number six in the top ten.
It's pretty good. There's better, but Roman Holidays, that holds up.
All right, number five, Reservoir Dogs. That's
Love
a
it.
Great movie.
Tarantino again.
And I have some other ones.
All right, you want to hold on to them? We'll get them in a minute?
Yeah, I've never heard of one of them.
Oh, all right.
Number four, I have not
heard
of. But
these are the highest regarded movies over at Netflix right now. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. The strangest part about talking about movies is that they're so subjective. You always think to yourself, or I always did anyway, that there's a couple movies out there that are foolproof, that if anybody sees Forrest Gump or E.T. or The Godfather or movies like that, it'd be impossible to not like them. But when I was doing The Night Show, I came up with movies like that I go, how could anyone not like? Those were just three of the ones I mentioned.
Right.
And everybody called up and texted and went, I hate Forrest Gump. I'd never sit through that again. Or E.T., come on, it's all sugar. It's just saccharine. I wouldn't want to see that again. Or The Godfather. And
it is a matter of taste.
Yeah, it is.
And this is just for the month of July on Netflix. But seriously, we mentioned some good movies, American Beauty, Good Will Hunting.
Usual Suspects.
Yeah, and those were all far down on the list. And now we're getting into the top... I got the top 10. We did Trainspotting, The Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Which people are astounded that I haven't seen. And then somebody says, don't waste your time. It stunk.
Now, that's another one, though, that I can't imagine a scenario where somebody would watch Princess Bride and not enjoy it. It's a really great story, and it's well acted and directed. But
doesn't it depend on what mood you are going into a movie or when you watch a movie?
Sure.
and what you're looking for in entertainment.
I guess.
Yeah, it does.
Number six, Roman Holiday from 1953. Like, that to me should not be in the top 10 here. But
you
I
haven't
never
seen
saw
it.
I know.
So
I know.
I think you'd like Roman Holiday. It's Gregory Peck again. Not as intense as he was in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Don't you think To Kill a Mockingbird's better than Roman Holiday?
Yeah,
okay.
I do.
Because they have this at five.
Yeah, that seems high up.
Or excuse me, six. Five is Reservoir Dogs, I agree with. Number four, a Wes Anderson movie, Moonrise Kingdom.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, I like almost all of his stuff. He makes very strange little movies, but they're always entertaining to me.
It says Moonrise Kingdom is whimsical and, yes, precious.
Yeah. Ed Norton's in it. Bruce Willis is in it.
All right. I'm in.
Two little kids who fall in love.
I love those kids.
Yep.
Three, The Color Purple. It's good.
Color Purple's really good. Yeah, that might be a little high up, but that's a really touching, moving story. Good Whoopi Goldberg movie. She's really good in it.
It's not Ghost.
No, it's not. It is not Ghost. There's not a single pottery scene in all of The Color Purple.
Come on. Wasn't that the most beautiful scene ever in a movie? Was
in
that
Ghost?
Pottery scene?
Yes.
Did you cry?
I'm trying to remember if I did cry in Ghost.
You cried.
I probably did. I was happy because the guy who killed Patrick Swayze in that movie.
Spoiler alert.
The guy who was mean to Patrick Swayze in that movie.
Yes.
Is a guy named Rick Avilas, who I know. He's a stand-up comic, and he's a terrible guy. So
it was appropriate.
Yeah, it's that's a long personal. Like during the movie, I'm like, why is he in this? Why
so
is
didn't
that
cry
guy? Because
you were jealous.
He was such a. He's no longer with us, Rick Avilas, but he's such a. He
well,
was
then
such
who
an
won,
evil
Bill,
guy.
You or he?
Well, I guess.
Number two, Hoop Dreams.
Hoop Dreams
is
really
a fantastic
good.
Movie. Number two.
Yeah, that might be pressing it a little bit, but that again, you could use as a gateway movie if you're afraid of documentaries. If you
it's
think
awesome.
Documentaries are boring, forget it. This will prove you wrong.
And the top movie that is playing on Netflix for this month, which is almost over, we
month
have another
of July.
Week left.
Yeah. Before you tell me what it is, do you agree or disagree with this decision?
I think it's an awesome movie and one of my favorites. I don't know if it's number one.
For a must-see movie on Netflix, yeah.
Well, it is a must-see movie, but I don't know. We've seen some other great movies, and The Godfather is not on this list because it's not
it's
available
not on Netflix.
Right.
Yeah.
So there are
oh,
people.
Oh, there's tons. I know. People keep texting in movies. How could this not be on the list
right.
or this? But it's Netflix, so they have a very limited amount of films. Way too limited for my liking.
I'm trying to give you hints to guess the number one movie for the month on right. Netflix. Out of the top 100, this is number one.
What kind of hint can you give me?
I can give you a really easy one.
Uh-huh.
This sure is a tasty burger.
Is it the Tasty Burger movie?
Keenan and Kel?
Is it? Yeah. Is it Good Burger with Keenan and Kel? Because that should be number one. If that's not number one.
This is a tasty burger. Really? That doesn't give it away?
No.
Yeah, Kevin got it right away.
What is it, Kevin?
How could you not? I mean, it's not a good impression. Like, I don't sound like him.
It's one of the better ones I've ever heard, Wendy.
Thank you very much.
What is it?
The movie or the impression?
All right, here's the type of burger was a Royale with cheese.
Oh, yeah. All right. Yeah. More to point, Tarantino just dominated
I
this
know.
List.
Pulp Fiction. It's a great movie.
But Wendy Samuel L. Pretty good.
That was a pretty good Samuel Jackson impression, Wendy, seriously.
I am just proud of myself for once that I can remember that I saw a movie.
Right.
Because that 1 hour photo with Robin Williams, I went on and on about, and you said, I have it at home, I'll bring it. I said, no, we'll find it. I got to see it right after Robin Williams died.
Yeah.
And about 7/8 of the way through the movie, Jim kept saying through the whole movie, we've seen this. I said, I have not seen it. And like the last 5 minutes, I'm like, we did see this.
Yeah.
It's still really good, but
right.
I did see it.
Don't you think Pulp Fiction, and I can't give clear-cut examples of this, but I'll just throw it out in a broad way, is like five or six different movies in one?
Yes.
Because every time you think, okay, I know what kind of movie this is, then it does something different, and then it does something different, and then it does another thing different.
I got to watch that again. That is a good movie.
Yeah. It's a tasty
movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I would highly recommend. If people have not seen Pulp Fiction, go see Pulp Fiction. It's really good.
I'm proud of myself for knowing one line from one
you
movie.
You got that one. You absolutely nailed that.
I live with people who can quote things backwards and sideways from Star Wars movies, really from any movie.
Can I give you a weird insight behind the scenes on Pulp Fiction?
Yeah.
All right. At the time, John Travolta was not working. You know, he had a period where he was one of the hottest stars in Hollywood, and then he went years where he was just not working. He just couldn't get work.
Post Welcome Back, Kotter.
Yeah, well, yeah, he did Welcome Back, Kotter, but then he did some movies and he was doing fine, and then things just kind
Blowout.
Of fell out. Yeah, Blowout. Yeah, that was one of them. Really good in Blowout. He did a bunch that were okay. You know, all right. So he's not working, and then Quentin Tarantino has the script for this movie for Pulp Fiction, and he wants Travolta, but he's not sure that it's right to get him involved. So he has a meeting with them, and instead of just like a regular sit-down meeting where they discuss what the movie would be about, or a dinner where they go out and just talk about their lives or themselves, Quentin Tarantino brings a whole bunch of board games over, including the Welcome Back, Kotter game, like a whole bunch of like Candyland, like that kind of thing. And the two of them spent a night just playing board games together, and he got the part because he impressed him playing board games. And it rejuvenated his career.
It was the best thing to ever happen to him. But I mean, isn't that like a dream come true?
Yeah.
Aren't you wishing for some great director to say, yeah. Hey, you want to play board games with me?
Come
Not
on
even
over.
Offering you a role just to sit around and play.
I got Clue. I got Staying Alive. I got, Hungry, Hungry Hippos. You want to come over and play? And if you do good, you can be in my movie.
That is
I
the
wish
greatest
every audition
story.
Was like that.
Plus, how fun would it be to play those games with Quentin Tarantino?
I know. Or with Travolta.
Yeah, I guess.
That would be all right, too. Play Go to the Head of the Class with Vinnie Barbarino. That'd be all right.
That is a dream come true.
I know.
What a great story.
I know. All right, we'll take a quick break, then we'll find out what's going on at the Republican National Convention. Ro Khanna is there, and Anna's there as well, right? Stick around. More coming. Bill and Wendy, WGN.